Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Is everybody in? Is everybody in? Everybody in. The ceremony is about to begin.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 137. I'm Dave and I'm here with Connor. Connor from Last Sons of Krypton. Connor from, Jeepers Creepers. What's it called? The Sons of the Dragon Iron Fist podcast. Is that right?
Close. Oh. Sons of the Dragon, the Immortal Iron Fist podcast.
Oh, okay, I was real close then. So. And it's a privilege to have Connor on. Connor's going to be a much more regular guest now that Stu's going monthly, and so this is the first of many Wild Horses Unleashed, some people are calling it, Connor.
Yeah, it's a good description as any. It's a flattering one, actually.
Yeah, well, it comes from Ray, a fellow king amongst the collective, so,
yeah.
You know, and shout out to Ray, by the way, who's had a tough time recently. Always our thoughts are with you, Ray, and I hope something like the Signal only cheers you up a little bit, man, you know?
My thoughts are with Ray even when he hasn't had a tough time.
Sure.
So. Yeah.
I mean, mine are sometimes. I don't walk around all day thinking about Ray. That'd be a little odd. You know,
that'd be crazy. Who would do that?
Now, Connor, Stu might be monthly, but he likes us to announce what book we're doing at the top of the show, and we're doing Stumptown, Volume 1, Greg Rucker, and Matthew Smallwood, I believe, is the artist.
Yeah.
So that we're doing that. So we've ticked that box off for Stu over there keeping score. Now, I want to get straight into it. Firstly, how are you, Connor? What's been going on?
It's hot.
It's a hot one up there, yeah?
Yeah, it's starting to be hot all the time. And, like, so my Western intake is going to go up because I just want to watch sweaty movies.
Oh, so, like classic old Westerns and stuff?
Yeah. And right now I'm watching Breaking Bad again.
Oh, yeah, so am I. I'm watching it for the first time.
Oh, yeah, where are you up to?
Well, I was just away for a week, so I'm, like, second last episode of season two.
Cool, yeah.
And I've got all this next week off. I'm at home, so I'll...
Sweet.
I'll go straight through it. I'll definitely finish off season two tomorrow and get into three. I'm loving it, by the way.
Yeah, it's great. So I heard $90. That's a pretty good bargain.
That was $90 on Amazon.com.au, free shipping. I mean, I'm telling you, man, that was $50 less than it was JB Hi-Fi's price.
You know how much I got it for?
How much?
$27.
Where?
It was secondhand. I got it off eBay.
That's all right. That's very good.
But yeah, no, I was stoked.
Yeah, definitely.
But yours would be brand new.
It is brand new. I wanted it for the collection. I'd already watched the first season on Netflix. And just thought, I want this for the collection, you know?
Yeah.
Now, you're a bit of a gamer, aren't you?
Yeah.
I just bought yesterday the Outer Worlds game on Xbox.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's good. I've just started playing. If you ever liked Mass Effect, it's got a similar kind of feel to that, like a bit more modernized, but similar feel.
No, I love Mass Effect.
If you like Mass Effect, you'll probably enjoy this. I've only played it for about 2 hours so far, but I'm very sort of, it's got me kind of enraptured, you know?
Yeah. Mm. That's right, it's Obsidian. I had my eye on this and then I became broke, so I forgot about it.
They did Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah, and they did Pills of Eternity, some other stuff too,
yeah,
which is really good.
If you have Xbox Game Pass, it's included in that.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I don't, but that is cool.
Yeah, it's one of the launch games. So that's pretty cool. Now, as for me, I've just come back from a week away with Michelle at Port Macquarie. It was very relaxing. It was very warm by the end, as you were saying, Connor, 34 degrees Celsius with some hot winds. I'm not sure what that is in Fahrenheit for our American listeners, but it's definitely getting on the warmer side. Yeah. I got to drive Michelle's Mercedes. She let me drive it for the first time.
Oh, wow.
So I did a leg up, like I did about a third of the drive, and then coming back I did about probably two-thirds of the drive. So that was good fun.
Yeah, cool.
You know, so that was good fun to get behind the wheel there. She never lets me drive it ever, so that was first time for me. Now, we've got a lot of show this show, haven't we? There's a lot of information. It's been a big week. I've been away. You've been adding to the news. I've been adding to the news. And I feel very satisfied with the news this week. I feel like this is going to be kind of like I always like to say that I'm one step away from cracking open the Watergate hearings, you know, like the modern-day equivalent. And I feel this time with this level of news, we're getting towards more of the hard-hitting journalism that I need and expect from the Signal of Doom. Do you agree?
I mean, you know, I think if you're still using "We Got This Covered," I think you got a while to go. I hate to say,
dude, I'm off them, man. We've Got This Covered. It is now officially on my list of it's bullshit. It's just nonsense. Yeah,
it is. It's awful.
Yeah. I mean, all week long they've been reporting. I don't know. Look, I don't normally pay that much attention to these sites, but I've noticed they're particularly bad. They're particularly clickbaity, you know?
Yeah, the worst is Cosmic Book News, but they're up there, that's for sure. One of them were the idiots that came up with Henry Cavill cast as Wolverine.
Really?
So, you know, if you believe that for a second.
All week long We Got This Covered have been going on about John Berthenol wants to return as Punisher. And he's going to be doing a film thing. And, like, there's no other supporting site. Every site that's mentioned it links back to them. And it's just bullshit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, are they earning, do you think, significant coin out of this? Like, are they somehow monetizing this to a massive extent?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's why they do it.
Yeah.
You know, more clicks equal more coin, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, it's just lame. It's just very lame. So, no, I actually am striking them off the list from now on. I'll occasionally might reference something from them, but I've never really had them as a main source, but I'm now actually discarding them as a primary content provider for the Signal.
It's hard to find good content providers, to be honest.
Signal of Doom.
Well, to fund your other contact, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. But you know, sometimes some good discussion points come up anyway. Now let's go into the first thing. First is Star Wars Episode 9 trailer came out during the week, the final trailer before the movie getting released about December 22, somewhere around there. I'm not sure of the exact date, but I know it's in mid to late to December. It's somewhere from the 15th to the 22nd. Now I'll hand you. I watched it twice. I watched it a few days ago. And was very confused because I watched it on my phone. I watched it again just before the show. I feel like I've got more of a grasp of the trailer now. I'll hand it over to you first off for your comments, Connor, because I know you're quite suspicious and cynical, really, of this movie, yeah?
Suspicious about it. Like, I know exactly what the movie is going to be, and I watched the trailer, and it's exactly what I expected. It's just, you know, marketing. We'll have Luke's voice again, so people can be like, "Ah, it's Luke's voice," and we'll have Palpatine's voice, and people are like, "Oh, it's Palpatine," and "Ooh, ominous Palpatine shadow."
Predictable. You know,
blah,
is what you're
blah, blah, blah. You know, I just felt absolutely nothing when I watched this.
Wow.
Like, and even I'm just
fair enough, man.
It hit all the numbers that I come to expect. Soulless is the term I would use, I suppose.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. It is very predictable. I don't know. There were bits of it. I like the cinematography of it. I thought it looked quite good.
I mean, that's all J.J. Abrams can do, really, is make things look good.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think J.J.'s weakness is story. It always has been.
Yeah.
I like the look of it, but you're right. Like, I mean, There was a Luke voiceover. There was a one-word Leia at the end. There was Leia once again hugging someone. I mean, my God, how many times are they going to haul that? That particular... It's like the same hug over three movies, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, I'll watch it, but it's looking to me very much like a popcorn, file-and-forget movie rather than an epic classic like Star Wars was, you know?
Yeah. I don't think I'll bother watching it.
Will you not even catch it in cinemas?
No, it's going to be the first movie besides Solo that I haven't caught in cinemas. First Star Wars movie. Like,
wow.
I mean, there's just no reason for me to see it. Like, you know, oh, it turns out Palpatine was behind everything all along. Oh, you didn't just pull that out of your ass at all.
Do you think Snoke will have been a puppet of Palpatine?
Probably. I mean, like, you had J.J. Abrams. He came out and said at one point, we were trying to figure out a way to tie up this trilogy with the other two trilogies.
Right.
And then he's like, so we decided on Palpatine because, you know, we were trying to decide where we go next after Last Jedi. And then Kathleen Kennedy's coming out and saying, oh, no, we were always planning Palpatine right from the get-go. And
bullshit, just, Kathleen Kennedy. Bullshit.
Oh, absolute bullshit. Yeah. Like,
you're a liar, Kathleen Kennedy. Like, you're a great producer, but you're also a liar, you know?
Yeah, the Palpatine's presence just kills it for me, because it just reeks of desperation. Mm. And, like, they keep saying, kill the past, and they keep dragging the past back to try and market their movies.
Well, JJ doesn't say that. That was Rian Johnson.
JJ
is more like, let's mythologize and monetize the past as much as possible. You know, let's monetize nostalgia. That should be JJ's on gravestone, you know?
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm hugely cynical of JJ Abrams. I think he can make movies look pretty, look good, have shallow emotional kicks, which seem good at the time. But I can't think of a single JJ movie or project where I can really celebrate a great story, you know?
Nah, yeah. Sorry, you go on.
Oh, no, I was just going to say I agree with you there. But JJ doesn't say kill the past. JJ actively tries to sort of, he doesn't do a proper homage. He sort of does a sort of like
rip off,
yeah, counterfeit, not quite as good rip off replica. Yeah, that's exactly what he does. And then he's like, close enough. Like, it's, you know, it's 2019, standards are lower. You know, like, filmmaking standards are somewhat lower than they were. And I wanted to give a shout out to Eric and Jimmy Rule the Galaxy. I consider them the premium Star Wars podcast out there. We're going to have Jimmy on the show, and I'm appearing on their show shortly. And Eric was making some comments about JJ, which were right on the money, basically. Like, this is a guy who, really frankly, he makes something look like it's going to be good. Like, but what Eric was saying as well is George Lucas has been so put into a corner, whereas Eric was saying most franchises, imagine George Lucas was dead, okay? Most owners of the IP would be desperate to get their hands on anything that George Lucas did to then monetize, you know? But instead, Disney bought the rights and have actively jettisoned Lucas from any involvement, really.
Yeah.
You know, and that made me think. That actually made me think. Eric had a really good point there. Like, I reckon totally that some of George's ideas are completely unfilmable and not that good, but I bet you there's some gold there. I bet you there's some gold in those hills.
From what I've heard of his plans for the trilogy, I already prefer it to what we got, so, yeah.
Well, what we've got is a 4.5 to 5 out of 10, you know?
Mm.
Like, we've gotten something that's very average or slightly below average, I personally feel. As opposed to, like, Empire, Return of the Jedi, New Hope, you know, which are, you know, they're close to, they're nines, they're 9.5s, really.
Yeah, they're classics, and Star Wars hasn't come close to them since then. No. And as I said before, I don't like the prequels, but I can respect that he was, you know, at least not making the same movies and just crapping on. Anyway, I've already talked about this. So
no, it's okay. It's okay. Like, it's part of, look, frankly, this is part of the review of Star Wars now. This is part of the conversation, like, that it's failing to live up to the expectations that were set up so highly, you know? Yeah. And really, with Disney, with all their money and, you know, apparent vision, are showing a real lack of vision with this. That said, I am looking forward to The Mandalorian, and I'm hoping that, you know, Jon Favreau and stuff can turn around on the TV front. I think this movie will be very predictable. Do you think that Rey is going to be a Skywalker? Because I think so.
No, I don't think he'll go that predictable, because he's probably read all the fan theories and he's like, I probably shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But you know, it'll be some stupid crap, I'm sure.
I read a ridiculous thing on CBR where they had an article saying some comic somewhere had showed Kylo Ren had finally surpassed Darth Vader. And I wrote a comment he's not even close.
Do me a lemon. Oh, God.
Yeah. Kylo Ren, one of the more interesting characters, actually, in the sequels.
Definitely,
But still so far from Vader in terms of everything that it's hilarious, really, you know?
Vader, in fact, no Jedi we've really seen could get beaten by someone who has had no training.
Mm.
As a Jedi, like
Kylo Ren, even has a stupid his lightsaber is kind of stupid. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, I get Kylo Ren got shot in the abdomen and everything by Chewie's bowcaster, but come on, man! Like, Sith fight through the pain. You know,
no, he's lame. Like as I said, one of the most interesting characters in the sequels, but that's not saying much because you're up against such like Rose Tico. I mean, I'm not getting into a huge thing about the actress, but I saw her in the trailer and I rolled my eyes. You know,
Yeah, she was pretty pointless and
terrible character. But she's Maz Kanata, terrible. You know, like
That stupid alien.
I'm missing examples of the sort of like Poe Dameron. Yeah, slightly interesting. Ray, bland. Finn, useless. Like they're not great characters. You know, they're poor. And to hit Colorado surpassed Vader. Vader is one of the most iconic characters in like modern cinema. And best villains of all time. Kylo Ren's so far below him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even...
Yeah, that's cool. We could move on, but I wanted to kind of give... I will say this, it looked pretty. It was a pretty trailer. Mm. It had some cool gadgets and stuff, some nice scenes with TIE fighters and different crafts and stuff. And, you know, was that Palpatine kind of coming down on a throne towards, I think it was Rey? Towards the end of the trailer? Yeah. So he's going to, have just been sitting there for, like, the last 30 years?
Probably.
Okay. Well.
Yeah, I don't know. Like...
Doing nothing.
There's kind of a version of this story which I like called Dark Empire.
Yes, I've heard of it, yeah.
Palpatine makes a comeback out of nowhere and Luke pretends to be his apprentice to sort of take him down from the inside. But the whole thing is Palpatine had, like, a... cloning thing. I mean, it was kind of dumb, but like this seems a lot dumber.
I've heard people explain it. It's basically like when his body would die, he'd go to another clone and move the consciousness over. Is that right?
Yeah, and it's like at least in that comic, it was still like the Skywalker legacy. It was Luke and Leia.
Yeah,
as like Luke as a Jedi Master taking him on. It wasn't, you know, everyone's like dead and miserable, and there's no point to anything. Like the Empire was still kind of defeated. Yeah,
that's fair enough, man. That sounds a lot better. I think probably what hasn't helped is the passage of time. So much time. Everyone who was in the you know, original trilogy is just so much older. Like, for example, Lando. You can't base a movie or too many scenes around Lando at age 80 plus, you know? You could have done a lot more with Mark Hamill than you did.
That's what kills me, because he got in really good shape. Yeah. For the role. And then they essentially had him standing around doing nothing.
Yeah.
And it's like Jedi are the characters you can get away with, like, being old. You know what I mean? I mean, for God's sake, Christopher Lee was Count Dooku.
Yeah.
He was late 80s.
You could have done a ton with Mark Hamill if you wanted to. Absolutely tons. Leia seems to have done nothing throughout the whole trilogy apart from floating space once.
Yeah.
And I thought Harrison Ford's character arc in Force Awakens was subpar. Was terrible.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
So I think we've covered this kind of thing. So it's not a ringing endorsement for the trailer, but I mean, I'll catch it in cinemas. But my expectations are quite low. I'm expecting like a 6 to 6.5 out of 10 movie, really at best.
I'll tell you what I am looking forward to make some positive Star Wars discussion when I'm on here for once. Charles Soule is taking over
for
the Star Wars comic, and he's setting it in between Empire and Jedi, and he wants to explore how Luke went from the end of Empire to become who he was in Jedi.
That's interesting.
I think that'll be a good book. And he previously worked on Darth Vader as well, which was good. So,
yes. Now I've gotten all the hard covers of Kieran Gillen's Darth Vader run. How was Chucky Soule in comparison to Kieran Gillen on Darth Vader?
I think I've
Vader?
Read like one issue, but it was really awesome.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well. Okay. Cool. I quite like Charles Soule on some books. I think he's quite a good writer. A lot of the time, he just churns and burns. But I think the stuff between Empire, like that really interests me. I might jump onto the Star Wars title actually, now that it's rebooting after Empire Strikes Back. That sounds like a good time to jump on.
Yeah,
there'll be no Han though, unfortunately.
No, but you know, I'm not like I can deal without Han.
Yeah, it's fine. There's plenty of Chewie, Lando, Princess Leia, obviously Luke Skywalker.
Most of the gangs there, and like there's so much. Like I've Luke Skywalker omnibus, right?
Yeah.
And, like, most of the stuff that's covered is in between A New Hope and Empire.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad to see that they're finally covering a different period of history, and a more interesting period, in my opinion.
I think there's a lot of room in between Empire and Return of the Jedi to explore.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, like, Luke became a Jedi Master in those two. He changes dramatically.
He becomes a lot more powerful, more skilled in that year, and... You know, it's like, wow, what were they doing? What's, you know, so it'll be good.
I remember as a kid going and seeing Return of the Jedi and Luke in the black uniform and actually for the first time really liking Luke. I was going, Luke's finally badass, you know? Because I was always a Han Solo kind of Chewie guy. And when I saw that in Return of the Jedi, like when he force chokes, is it the Gamorrean guards or someone?
Gamorrean guards. Yeah.
I quite like the Gamorrean guards too. I wouldn't mind seeing the Gamorrean guards make a comeback in one of the movies at some point.
Why not, right? I mean, they're bringing everything back.
Yeah.
Jabba back.
Yeah, I had the Gamorrean guards as figures. Me too,
actually.
I was going to say, so did you collect some of the figures back in the past?
No, my uncle collected a bunch of stuff from like the 70s and 80s.
Cool.
And then someone burned his shed down when they were all in it, so.
Oh, no.
Yeah, just a little horror story for everyone there.
that's almost you need to call Frank Castle to dish out some punishment.
Yeah, I had a really awesome like little diorama of Obi-Wan dueling Vader in A New Hope.
Cool.
But I don't know where it is. I was a kid, so it probably got trashed.
That's cool. Yeah. Now, moving on, we've got some news about Thor 4 could possibly include a breast cancer storyline for Jane Foster. Taika Waititi said, this is an ongoing debate that we're still having at Marvel. We're trying to figure out how long, how many months or years. This is after Endgame. At what point does this take place? I think we always want to keep changing up with Thor. He's so interesting when he's changing all the time. It's fascinating he uses the words, he's so interesting, because that tells me that Chris Hemsworth is firmly still in the picture, which doesn't surprise me. And also, you know, I actually thought the storyline of the female Thor was pretty good from Jason Aaron. I read quite a lot of it. It was, I don't know, the basic beats of it with her having the cancer and then turning into Thor, and each time she'd come back, her treatment was worsened, was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I can't really weigh in because I pretty much haven't read any Thor. So, but I liked Thor Ragnarok. So
yeah, okay. You know. Well, Taika Waititi's definitely going to be doing this one. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Now, Bloodshot. That's the new movie coming out. The Valiant Studios property. Vin Diesel is playing the role of Bloodshot. There was a sort of short trailer announced. The first thing we've seen from this, I believe. A Chinese company basically bought up Valiant and then has got a huge movie deals with all their characters. Did you have a look at this?
No, sorry, I must have missed this on the news.
Look, I'd encourage any Valiant fans to go check it out. It wasn't the greatest trailer in the world, and it wasn't getting the greatest reaction, and I don't think it showed much of Bloodshot, but at the same time, I think it's very interesting that this Chinese company, they basically ousted the founders of Valiant Comics, The people who relaunched Valiant were fans of the original Valiant line back in the 90s or whatever.
Okay.
And they actually got bought out by this Chinese company. So I assume they made some decent money out of it, so they're probably not complaining. But at the same time, this company's now set up deals with, I think, Sony or someone like that to market their films, which I think is really interesting that we could get a whole other creative well for Hollywood to draw on for the movies, you know, outside of Marvel DC.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's watch this space. Then we had John Cho. You might know him from Star Trek, injured on the set of Cowboy Bebop, forcing a 7 to 9 month production hiatus on the show.
Wow.
Have you... are you aware of this guy? I think he was in Harold and Kumar, Go to White Castle,
John
as well.
Cho.
Yeah, I think it is him. He was also in Star Trek. He's an Asian guy. He played Sulu in the new Star Trek movies, the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies.
Yeah.
Cowboy Bebop, I know you're a bit of an anime guy. Have you caught this one at all?
I've seen Cowboy Bebop.
So
like Cowboy Bebop.
No. Yeah, are you looking forward to the show? That's my question.
I don't understand why they try and do live-action adaptations all the time. Okay. I mean, I might check it out, but I'm not. None of them have really been good, so.
True. I mean, what did you think of Ghost in the Shell?
I didn't watch it.
It's not that bad. Like, I mean, it's not great, but it's not that bad, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't like Scarlett Johansson, so.
Oh, I do. Oh, I do a lot.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, I think she's incredibly attractive and,
I mean, you know, hot. She's that.
She's hot. She can punch a line, like. I don't know. I like her. I've always liked her, though. I've liked her since she was, like, in Ghost World, you know?
Mm.
So I followed her career arc, and I don't know. I mean, I think she does a good job with what she does. Like, it's not like her roles are that demanding, and they're a bit physically demanding, but, you know, I think she punches a line as good as many an actor, you know?
Yeah, I don't like her Black Widow.
Oh, you don't like her Black Widow?
No, in fact, I hate it.
Wow. What is it you don't like?
It's just, it's so bland. Every time I see her on screen, I'm just not, you know, especially compared, like, when you compare to the caliber of the actors around her, and the fact that she doesn't put on, bother putting on an accent as well. I know you can, like, oh, she's a spy, of course, you can put on an American accent still.
Sure.
And now every, like, Black Widow thing is looking like Scarlett Johansson, and whenever she's in a game or something, she has an American accent, and it annoys me. So
I see.
Yeah.
Wowee. The Signal of Doom has a split vote on Scarlett Johansson. I've always been a proponent of her. I've been, you know, pumping a train for a long time. But Connor, I am impressed. I am impressed that you're immune to the wiles of Scarlett. That's a first. You know, I don't know. For me, it's just like, look, she's not the world's greatest actor. Don't get me wrong. But I put her against, like, a Jeremy Renner. I don't think Jeremy Renner's the world's greatest actor either. I think he looks okay. He punches his... He's what I call a professional. That's how I view her. They're just a good working pro, you know, who happened to have fallen into the right role and made a lot of money, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen Jeremy Renner be good before.
He was good in Tag. Have you seen Tag?
No, but I've seen... He was in American Hustle, right?
Was he? I can't even remember. So. Yeah, I think he probably was.
It wasn't a very good movie, but he was good in that.
Yeah, I enjoyed that movie with Bradley Cooper.
No, with Christian Bale and Amy Adams.
Isn't Bradley Cooper in it as well?
Let me have a look.
I think he was, man.
I'm pretty sure he is, yeah. I didn't remember his character in it.
I really enjoyed the movie. Jennifer Lawrence is also in it very good as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. Well, it just goes to show that it's you know, there's different perspectives. Now, the Watchmen show has come out. Have you caught this yet? I haven't actually watched an episode yet.
I'm not going to bother watching it.
Okay, wow.
I looked at the trailer and stuff, it just doesn't seem like Watchmen, and it just doesn't seem like something I'm interested in, you know? So
I definitely agree with you there that it doesn't seem like the Watchmen that I know, you know, that I think of. But I am interested. I am going to check it out. But I really got annoyed when Damon Lindelof said it's not a sequel, it's a remix, and I was like, oh, please. Please don't split hairs when you're, it's not a sequel. Oh, what is it then? It's a remix. Okay. Yeah. Go. Please never talk again. It really annoyed me, actually, frankly. I often bring it up because how annoying that was. But I will watch a show with an open mind. And because I've got this week off, it's giving me plenty of time. I can. It's on Hulu, like in the HBO section. I'm just going to pop it on and check it out. And if it's good, I'll make it a couple show for Michelle and me, but it'll need to be good.
I've heard it's, like, good. I've heard, like, the people who are... Because I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and I'm like, I don't understand how anyone's interested in this show. Mm. And they're saying a lot of people who are interested are, like, Damon Lindelof fans.
Yeah. Well, he's quite good, you know, in general. Look, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, he has his own fan base that he brings with him, you know, to new projects.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, next episode of Signal, I'll have a review of the first episode, okay? Make that a deal, and I'll discuss it with you so that we can probably hate it together, because I must admit, I like my Watchmen as the comic. You know what I mean? I quite like the movie.
The movie's good, too.
Yeah, I thought the movie was really good at sort of making it like the comic a lot, you know?
I thought the movie did the ending better, if I'm being quite honest. I know that's a controversial opinion, but...
Yeah, no, I don't completely disagree with you. I thought, I just thought it was quite an effective movie. It was one of my favourite movies that Zack Snyder ever did.
Yeah, it is really good.
Yeah. Marvel's Cloak and Dagger was cancelled on Freeform after 2 seasons, and I believe the Cloak and Dagger actors are going to be appearing on the new season of Runaways, is the announcement. Mm. I watched probably most of the first season of Cloak and Dagger. It seemed okay, you know?
Yeah.
Like, aggressively okay.
I never watched it because it didn't really seem like it was aimed at me, but I do feel bad for fans of the show because it's always painful when you get season 2 cancellations.
Yeah, but, I mean, I feel bad for them, but, I mean, I'd feel worse for me. You know, it's 2 seasons of Punisher. You know what I'm saying? Where are the people crying for me? You know, the Cloak and Dagger fans weren't there to support.
There's less people crying for me with Iron Fist. So.
you got the short end of the stick there, because Iron Fist was kind of the sort of scapegoat.
It was
really.
The whipping boy. Yeah.
It was the whipping boy. Yeah. It was a bit boring, if I can be honest. First season, at least, anyway.
I will respect your opinion and then disregard it.
Did you not find the first season a bit dull?
No, absolutely not. I loved it. I loved. Right. Okay. I hated a couple of episodes, like towards the end, but yeah. I thought it started off really well. Had a good middle, and it ended really well. It was just like episode 8, I think.
Okay.
Nine, I really hated it.
Look, we watched it. I certainly didn't hate it by any means. And I actually thought the actor was quite decent in, say, the Defender show and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought he got a bit of unjustified sort of criticism at times.
He got harassed off Twitter.
Do you feel that sorry for these guys who are worth hundreds of millions of dollars and, you know, getting harassed off Twitter, though, really?
I don't think he's worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
He's probably worth a few million. He's probably worth a few million, though.
I feel bad in the sense is like it's kind of fucked up his career.
Yeah.
You know, and the person who harassed me on Twitter is embarrassingly from our country. So
really?
Yeah, she was. And at one point, they complained that the fact that they didn't eat brown M&Ms was racism.
What?
Yeah, that's kind of. But anyway, I do feel bad for him. I don't feel bad for a lot of celebrities, but like I feel bad for him because like you know. He got this role, and then he immediately just got shit for it. And it's like, you know, even if you are a bit well off, it's like, you know, that would just drive you up the wall.
I suppose, yeah. Look, he certainly didn't. How can I say? He didn't deserve the level of criticism he was getting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he's just an actor doing a role, basically.
Especially not for the reasons of like, you know, that whitewashing or whatever. It's like, well, that has nothing to do with him.
Yeah. You know. Address that to the show's producers and to Marvel and to Disney, not to the actor who got hired to do what was probably a dream gig, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like, hey, I get to be a star of one of these Netflix shows.
But that's how people are. They're so stupid. Like,
oh, yeah.
In Doctor Strange, whatever the woman's name is who played...
Tilda Swinton.
Yeah. People were harassing the fuck out of her. It's like she was hired. You know what I mean? Like, she didn't actually... sort of just start doing the role and I started filming her. She was hired by Disney to do this, you realise? Like, I don't know, it's funny that I know the actors are the face of it, but really, in a lot of ways, they're puppets. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like when people were harassing Rose Tico.
Oh, yeah. She's terrible, but like...
But like, it's not her... Yeah. Like, no, you don't harass her if you hate, like, the way her character's written. Harass the writers and the directors.
Exactly.
Well, don't harass anyone, but, you know...
Rose Tico was... There's nothing on the page there of any interest whatsoever.
It's just the actress, like, getting personally harassed.
It's terrible. Kelly Marie Tran, she got... Apparently, supposedly, she's this, like, real happily bubbly sort of person who just got bombarded with hate, which is... completely unnecessary. Completely.
Yeah, she seems really nice in real life.
It's ridiculous. It's frankly ridiculous. Like,
it is. It's absurd.
It is. But, you know, but I will say this on the flip side, terrible character, you know?
Yeah.
But then again, she's in the same boat with a lot of the other characters. Like, people say Poe Dameron's this great character. He's slightly better. You know what I mean?
He's just better.
Yeah, like, he's a bit better. But, like, it's not like he's not that much better.
Yeah, no, he's no Han Solo, you know?
No, he's,
like,
he's nothing.
None of these characters come close to any of the original characters, and it shows.
Not even close. They don't even come close to the original characters who looked cool, who barely did anything. For example, Boba Fett, IG-88, you know? Like, these are cool characters.
Dengar,
yeah. IG-88 and Dengar are in one scene. Of the whole original trilogy. And they're so much better than fucking Poe Dameron and, you know, Finn. Finn, for me, is the epitome of just nothing. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, you look at him and there's almost just like an emptiness there where a character should be.
Yeah, they could have done a lot with him and they just didn't.
No, I
don't. So,
anyway, we're kind of ranting on Star Wars. I'm kind of enjoying it. It's a Sunday night here. Dave's got the week off. I've kicked my Ugg boots off. I've kind of rolled the sleeves up and I'm getting stuck in. Now, we had some news last week that Lucifer was apparently going to be in Crisis on Infinite Earths. That is reported as not being the case now. Ellis, the guy who plays Lucifer, was just saying he was going to Vancouver for a friend's birthday.
Yeah.
So it did seem strange that I believe it's on another network. I don't think it's a CW show, Lucifer. So that would have been quite interesting.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't know much that, actually.
I thought you were going to drop a little bombshell there, and I was ready for it. No, I mean, we've watched Lucifer. It's a pretty damn good show, and he's a pretty good actor, actually, too. If you're looking for a pretty, like, cool show with a good sort of acting hub, like, in terms of how these shows are, Lucifer's pretty damn good.
Yeah?
Yeah. No, we've watched, like, 2 seasons of it. Like, it's...
It's like a procedural crime show, right?
Procedural crime show. He's Lucifer, i.e. the devil, and he's kind of got some powers and stuff. Like, it's not fucking, you know, Breaking Bad, but it's kind of funny. It's got good leads. The actress who plays off him is very good as well.
Yeah.
It's just a likable show, you know. Like, you could do a lot worse is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Now we've come to Stumptown. Now, we are going to be discussing the comic Stumptown, but the show is apparently, I think, on ABC in the States, and it's on Hulu out here. I'm not sure what terrestrial network's picking it up. Have you caught it? Because Michelle and I are hooked.
The show?
Yes.
No. If, like... it's good. Usually for shows, like, especially since Stumptown doesn't have many issues, I'd probably read all of Stumptown before I watch the show. Like, I'm in a hurry.
Okay.
It's
very good. It's a female Rockford Files set in the, like, 2020s or whatever we're in, you know? It's like a Rockford Files for now with a strong female protagonist. If that sounds dull, go and watch it. Kobe Smulders from How I Met Your Mother and Maria Hill, you know, the Avengers movies, is the lead actress in it. Jake Johnson, he played the adult, one of the Spider-Men in Spider-Verse. He's very good as the bar owner, Gray. The brother's very good. She's got a brother with Down syndrome. We know this from the comic. It's a really good show.
Oh, so the brother's in it?
Yes.
Because I looked it up and I couldn't see him mentioned anywhere, so...
No, he's definitely in it, yeah.
Okay,
he's
cool.
Definitely in it. It's really good. I mean, they've twisted some stuff around, but, like, her character is dead on, you know?
Yeah.
We're hooked, man. We're hooked. And funnily enough, I don't know if I said this on the signal, Michelle came to me with the show. She goes, have you heard of this show? It's this female detective. I've watched a couple episodes. It's really good. And she started explaining it. I'm thinking, this sounds familiar. And then I realized it was Stumptown, which is the show that I was waiting to show her. So we're just meant to be together, aren't we?
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it is funny, you know. We're engaged now, Connor, so we're just, you know, we're really in sync at the moment.
Synchronizing.
Yeah. We're synchronizing our lives. She doesn't know what she's got herself in for, synchronizing with my life. She's like, there's way too many comics in this life, David. Green Arrow and the Canaries will take the place of Arrow on CW. I know you hate the CW shows, and I haven't watched Arrow since almost the first season.
Yeah.
So what do you think happened? Like, obviously, there must have been something happened between Stephen Amell and the network.
I don't know. I think maybe he just, they've had a few seasons. Maybe he just feels like it's had a good run, and they're just deciding to,
really?
You know.
Yeah. But if I was in his shoes, I would just keep milking it for as long as possible. Till cancellation.
He probably has, like, a lot of money by now.
Yeah. Look at the Supernatural guys, though. The Supernatural guys just kept milking it. They just kept milking it, man.
Well, now they've milked it up. They're set up for, like, and their kids are probably set up for life, too.
That's it. So. I'd be the same. I reckon he asked for more money. I reckon he wanted more money, and they said, we don't need you because we've got all these other shows around it now. And the fact that they're still carrying on with the Canaries tells me that this was a money dispute.
Okay.
That's just my read on the situation. I mean, this isn't a guy who's a good actor. He's a terrible... Like, I'll say it now. He's a terrible actor.
Wow.
He's a pretty boy who's a terrible actor. In the early seasons of Arrow, he was shockingly bad as an actor.
Oh, really?
In my opinion.
Okay.
Have you caught any of it?
Not really.
Oh, dude, like, they say a lot of women, like, you know, actresses famous to get by on their looks. As a male actor, this is a guy relying on his looks. I mean, Brandon Routh is another example. Terrible actor. Terrible actor. Oh, he's actually not as bad as... Brandon Routh's one of the worst actors I've ever seen on TV.
I mean, I've only seen Brandon Routh as Superman, but he was pretty wooden.
He was horrible. He's even worse now. He's even worse now. His Atom is cringeworthy.
Oh, really? That's a shame.
Oh, it's terrible.
Because I like the Atom.
Well, get ready to be disappointed. It's nothing like any Atom you've ever seen before. It's just a very pretty boy... trying to punch lines. That's all it is.
He's going to be our Kingdom Come Superman
as
well.
And he's going to be terrible. He's going to be shockingly bad as Kingdom Come Superman. Wow. A role with some gravitas, you know what I'm saying? Which is exactly what he doesn't have.
Right, yeah. I guess I'll be interested to see it then. I mean, I think about all the others, like every other actor that's been cast as Superman, Henry Cavill, Christopher Reeve.
Good actors.
You know, I feel like, well, they would be better as Kingdom Come Superman.
Yeah. Of course they would be.
I think Dean Cain would be kind of a funny, interesting choice for a Kingdom Come Superman. I don't think it would work, though. But
I like Dean Cain. I got my picture taken with him when he came to Australia.
Oh, he's cool. I like him. Yeah. But I can't picture him as like a grizzled...
No.
But I did catch him as Vandal Savage in Smallville, which was pretty fun.
That's cool. Yeah, I don't mean to turn this into the anti-Brandon Routh show, but him and Stephen Amell are both shockingly bad actors. Stephen Amell, I mean, honestly, like, he just gets by purely on his looks, really. Mm. But that's what I'm saying. I don't think his career's going anywhere special after this. Like, he'll be milking Arrow on the convention circuit forever. And he's set up a lot of conventions in the States, so this is a guy who's very well off, you know?
He's a pretty nice dude, though.
Oh, niceness doesn't get the job done.
I'm just saying.
He's nice? Really? Guy. That's all we're going... He's nice?
Yeah. Being nice can be important.
What has he ever done to impact on our lives to make him nice? What has he done?
I don't know. I've just seen, like, on the Superman Hope page and stuff, seen a few interviews, and he's nice. Okay. And he's, you know, filmed in Sydney. Nice here. It's just...
Maybe I'm just in a harsh mood. But niceness isn't cutting it. You know what I'm saying? Like, niceness. If he actually did something for me, personally, then he'd go a notch up. You know what I'm saying?
I don't hate him. Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't think he's a great actor, but I don't have this hate of him.
Yeah. Oh, look, I mean, fair enough. Yeah, I'm probably getting a bit carried away. But I just would love to know the details behind his departure on the show, basically.
Yeah.
I do know that he's, like, frankly, the guy's actually quite clever. Like, you know, that's one angle where I'm saying he's not the world's greatest actor. Okay, there's a lot of actors working who aren't the world's greatest. But he is smart because he sets up a lot of conventions in the States that are kind of like your supernovas here, like smaller conventions totally dominated by TV and media people. And he's making a lot of coin out of that as well. So he's behind that as well. So he's obviously quite clever. Like, he set himself up nicely. And as you say, maybe he has business interests that took him away from the show, you know?
Well, I'm reading here that Amell wanted the show to go on without him even at, like, the end of the seventh season.
Right.
But they wanted to do a shortened eighth season to wrap things up, which he agreed to. So,
okay. All right. Yeah. So maybe it was just one of those scenarios where he's making so much more money outside of the show. He could be, you know? Because that's the only reason I could see him leaving. Like, he's not going to have a film career. Like, he might get another show. That's his hope. He might get another show, do a Nathan Fillion and bounce from show to show.
He'll be fine. I think he'll be fine. He's not going bankrupt or anything.
No, I'm not worried, but I like to dramatise these things a little bit, Connor, if you haven't noticed.
No, just a bit.
Like, I like to give it a bit of the Dave spin, make it a bit more dramatic. Now, we had here, well, this actually came up last week, but it's again in the show news this week. Paul Dano is playing Edward Nashton, better known as the Riddler. As far as I'm aware, his name was Edward Nigma in the comics, but they've changed it to Edward Nashton.
That's pretty weird. Maybe he changes it to Nigma. I don't know why he would, but maybe he wanted the Enigma sort of thing.
Are you familiar with his actor? Because Paul Dano. Yeah.
Yeah, he's good. It's classic. Okay. I think he's good casting for the Riddler. I can definitely see him.
All right, because Stu was giving him the double thumbs up. I've never heard of the guy, ever.
Yeah.
I saw a picture of him. I don't know him. Like,
honestly, Paul Dano being the Riddler is probably what would sell me on seeing the movie.
Okay, fair enough. Well, that's two people out of two conversations about this that are thoroughly behind him, so I trust your judgment there. And
like, I'm not
Stu's
saying
judgment.
He's like a Jack Nicholson or like a Marlon Brando, but I'm saying, you know, he's good. He's good in everything I've seen him in, and he like looks good for the role. So
Fair enough. Is he getting better than Jim Carrey?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't think Jim Carrey was bad. It was
cheesy.
It was very cheesy, but he was definitely the most entertaining part of that movie.
Tommy Lee Jones was bad as Two-Face.
He was terrible.
He was awful.
Gone with, Jesus.
What's his name? Lando.
Yeah.
Yeah, why they should have.
Blanking on his name.
Billy Dee Williams.
They also should have gone with Keaton still as Batman and Tim Burton still attached, but hey, whatever.
Well, that covers down to toys being sold at McDonald's, you know?
Yeah. Because Batman Returns was too icky.
Yeah, it's interesting, though. But, I'm looking forward to the Batman Matt Reeves trilogy, which is going to be coming out in 2021, June 25, my birthday.
Wow, nice.
So I'm looking forward to that. Jeff Loeb, the longtime head of Marvel's television division, is expected to leave the company, according to Variety. Citing unnamed sources, the Hollywood Trade states Loeb is in the market for an exclusive deal with outside studios as a producer. I mean, given that this was the guy who was behind kind of the Netflix shows and various other things, I mean, you know, there's some serious credit to his bow.
Yeah. And obviously Kevin Feige, or Feige, however you pronounce his name, is taking over everything
Kevin
else,
Feige,
so.
Yeah.
Feige. See, I did two pronunciations and they were both wrong.
Well, I say Kevin Feige, which is how I've heard it pronounced by others.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, maybe DC will snatch him up.
I think they probably should snatch him up. I think Jeff Loeb has been an asset, really.
Although Titans and Doom Patrol are killing it, so...
Yeah. It's like maybe they don't need him.
Well, because Geoff Johns, I think, is involved and he's doing a good job. So.
Yeah. I've got to catch up on Titans, man. I got distracted by Breaking Bad, but this week I'm going to catch up on Titans, too, because, as you know, I enjoy it, man. I think it's good fun.
Yeah, it is. It is good.
It's just a good, solid show, and it's in live action. You know what it's like? It's like, you know how a lot of the animated shows, you watch them and you're like, man, that's just a good show? This is like that. It's kind of like, it's like a good 7.5 to 8 show, you know, and it's just solid. I really enjoy it. Now, I've got some comments here. Now, obviously, over the last couple of weeks, we've had Martin Scorsese weigh in on Marvel movies saying they like theme parks. Francis Ford Coppola, an actor, a director I greatly admire, also jumped on board with even sort of doubling down on those comments. And now Bob Iger, the head of Disney, piped up. He basically said they've got their rights to bitch about it if they want. And this is the question he posed. Are you telling me Ryan Coogler making Black Panther is somehow doing something that is less than Martin Scorsese or Francis Ford Coppola has ever done on any one of their movies? And my answer is, I would say yes, Black Panther is definitely lesser to the heights of Scorsese and Francis Ford Coppola,
I mean,
personally.
Making it, it could have had the same ambitions, but it's obviously less than...
I don't know, I just thought he could have picked better movies to stack up against.
Yeah.
I don't know, it was just an odd comment. I get he's the head of Disney and he's backing his own product, but Scorsese and Francis Ford Coppola's best stuff, like Apocalypse Now, Godfather.
Bob is a dick anyway. Like, he's openly come out and admitted that, you know, he cares more about making money than making art. And now he's trying to get on a high horse and go, but our movies are art. It's just piss off, man.
Yeah, well, it's like Eric on Eric and Jimmy Rule the Galaxy called him a soulless monster the other day.
Yeah, that's, you know, in the ballpark, that's for sure.
He almost is a walking cash sign, isn't he? Like... Yeah. His eyes gleam just with money.
Ding, ding.
And you can just see him at home, like looking up Box Office Mojo and seeing whatever fucking, you know, their movies took in and then compare it to his movies, and his movies make so much more. And he's like Scrooge McDuck, like, you know, rolling around in his coins.
Yeah.
I just thought it was funny that he posed that question as if Black Panther was this movie that couldn't be bettered by anything. I know that was the public press behind the movie, but that's not the reality, kids.
Yeah,
like, Black Panther is a good movie, but it was wildly overrated. Wildly overrated.
Man, I thought it was boring.
Well, I thought it was quite good. I'd give it a 7.5 to an 8 at best, but it was wildly overrated by pundits so desperate to court sort of political correctness and social change. But is it a good movie? Yes, it is a good movie. Is it one of the better Marvel movies? Maybe. But does it compare to Godfather Part 1, Part 2, to Mean Streets, to Taxi Driver, to King of Comedy, to Casino? No, it's nowhere near it. Like, it's nowhere near it. A lot of the time, as you just said, Connor, it's very boring and formulaic a lot of the time in Black Panther. And I'll tell you a character that I think is wildly overrated, Shuri. People were announcing Shuri, the Black Panther sister, was one of the best characters out of the movies. And I was like, really, like, for a moment, I was like, who? And
I don't then I was know like, what, like, quirky, super intelligent person?
Yeah.
Ooh, I've never seen that before.
Oh, yeah, I know. I've never seen that before. That's in almost every show ever that to do with this just genre. Like, that was a cardboard character, I'm afraid, kids.
Yeah.
Like, that didn't require a lot of work.
That's
really.
Because she's a great role model for the kids.
I know, I understand. But it was sickening how people were reacting at a certain point to that movie and piling on going, it's the world's greatest. I actually heard one guy, it was good actually, out of Chicago, a sports podcaster there, Mike North. I got a lot of time for him. He said, Black Panther, I don't need to go and see Black Panther in cinemas. I knew actual Black Panthers in the 60s. That's what he said. He actually, I knew Black Panthers. Go away, kids. You know, and like, I don't know, there was just something about it that was just so wildly overrated. Like, similar to Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman's a good movie with a not a great end, but it was embraced like it was the world's greatest movie because it was socially, you know, acceptable at that moment in time. And yeah, it's an important movie, but it wasn't the greatest of movies, Wonder Woman. You watch it again with a colder eye, it's a good movie. That's about it.
Yeah, like I didn't see Wonder Woman for months because I was so annoyed by the reviews it was getting.
Oh, yeah.
And then I saw the movie and I'm like, oh, this movie isn't actually that political.
Like, no, it's not at all. It's not at all. But it's just, it was embraced by this contingent that just wildly overrate things. You know, that just, that like, and Bob Iger, like, soulless cash machine that he is, going, can Black Panther, how could Scorsese and Francis Ford Coppola have bettered Black Panther? They bettered it several times, you know, each of them, you know?
Yeah.
It just annoyed me. I just wanted to bring it up on The Signal so that people knew my views because, you know, I didn't want anyone to be... If I died tonight after The Signal, you know what I'm saying? After I post it up, at least I would have this on the record. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, on Twitter, director Patty Jenkins officially welcomed DC villain Maxwell Lord to the cast of the film, the new Wonder Woman 1984 movie, played by The Mandalorian star Pedro Pascal, joining Christian Wiig's Cheetah as the film's antagonist. That's quite interesting.
I thought he was already cast, but
well,
it's not.
I don't know. This happened on Twitter. Now, firstly, I'll tell you something interesting. Do you know J.M. DeMatteis, the comic writer? He actually said villain, not to me, because in his original run, Maxwell Lord was just kind of like their financier.
Yeah.
He wasn't evil at all. And then, obviously, he became evil, and eventually Wonder Woman snaps his neck when he's mind-controlling Superman. Now, do you think the film will go that far? I think it probably will.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they'll do that, because it's like the really famous moment with the character. So
it was a great moment when Wonder Woman was being written by Greg Rucka. It was a lot of good stuff coming out from DC during that period, you know?
Yeah.
How were you on that, man? Because that was a big moment in Superman as well.
What, Superman being mind-controlled by Maxwell Lord?
Yeah, and then the stuff to do with Wonder Woman about forgiving her and stuff.
I haven't actually read it, so...
It's good stuff, man. Greg Rucka was writing the titles at the time, and he made it like a really compelling like mini-universe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good stuff. And you've got to... Dude, if I've got any recommendations for you, it's go back and read that Greg Rucka Superman run.
I'm pretty sure I have... I think it's called Sacrifice. So I'm pretty sure I have, like, the issues where Superman's fighting Wonder Woman.
It is called Sacrifice, man. You're correct.
Yeah, like, I have that on my shelf because I was getting stuff for Infinite Crisis when I got up to it, and that was related, I think, so...
Dude, I'm going to say something now that's pretty dark. If the zombies take over tomorrow, at least you can bunker down and read those issues, you know?
Yeah, no, I have a few things to read.
Dude, just today, I was walking up the stairs, and suddenly I thought, what if I got to the top of these stairs, I was carrying something from Michelle, and there was a fucking zombie running at me? And I actually full-on visualized it as I said, what if I crest these stairs and there's a zombie fucking charging at me?
I mean, I was like that 10 years ago. I even had, like, a book to survive a zombie apocalypse, and now I'm just kind of like... I don't know.
Well,
I guess,
you know,
the zombie hype's died for me, Dave.
Well, it never dies for me completely, man. Like, I always have that. Like, if you remember back in, like, 2012, when they all reckoned the world was going to end.
Yeah.
I must admit, there was a portion of me thinking, like, bring it. You know, if it's all going to end in Hellfire, bring it.
Wow.
Yeah. It didn't, though. That's the thing. It didn't end in Hellfire at all.
It never does.
No, it continued on.
Yeah, Y2K keeps happening.
Exactly, man. Just keep on trucking. Jared Leto reportedly tried to have the Joker movie killed. This was quite funny. Jared Leto had some connections at Warner's, and when he heard the news that Joaquin Phoenix's movie was moving ahead instead of his solo movie, he tried to kill the movie very unsuccessfully. I think Jared Leto needs to get over it, don't you?
Look, I don't blame him. I mean, he kind of got shafted. He keeps... You know, he said he saw, like, the cut that they aired to Suicide Squad and he hated it because it cut out so much of his scenes. And I'm not saying like that he was good or anything, or that he would have been good, but if I was him, I'd be pissed off too, and I would definitely try to have that movie killed.
I like it. So would I. But, you know, yeah. That's not the narrative we're trying to sell here, Connor.
Well, I'm not into selling narratives. I'm sorry.
You know, I like it, though, man. I like it. You're right. If you're in Jared Leto's shoes, if we put ourselves in the shoes of Jared Leto, of course you'd you'd try to have the movie killed. You know?
Yeah.
Fair enough. I like it, Connor. You're bringing a bit of balance to the scene. Like, I normally, you know, I react. Like, I thought Jared Leto was terrible as a Joker. But at the same time, in his position, where he's got like a solo movie and a Harley movie was potentially on the table, of course you have tried to have a fucking different movie with a different actor using the character that you're, you know, associated with.
I would have liked to have seen his cut scenes from Suicide Squad.
Oh, so would I. I would be interested in them, but I think it would be more of the same, dude. Like, he was pretty bad, man. Like, really. Like, it wasn't great Joker. It was poor.
Yeah, I don't really feel that strongly about his Joker. Like, a lot of people seem to have this, like, really big hate of it, and I'm just kind of shrug. I don't know, I just
thought it was lame. Like, I didn't hate it, I just thought it was lame. I thought Harley outshone him completely.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm just like, I watched the movie, nothing really struck me about anything about it. I liked Will Smith, but that's, you know,
Will Smith was good.
I liked Will Smith.
So you weren't a big fan of Harley, because I love Margot Robbie as Harley, dude. I'll be honest, man, big time.
I think she's a good Harley. Yeah. I'm like a huge Harley fan, but I think that she makes us with Harley Quinn.
You're talking to the guy who did like 6 years of reviewing Batman Universe Harley titles.
Yeah.
I'm a grizzled veteran. I've actually finally gave my notice to Dusty recently, where I'm closing out my chapters of Harley. I'm finishing off with doing Harleen, which is a really good series by Stepan Sajak, and another Harley title that's coming out, and then I'll be closing the chapter on that element of my life. But that's been a very interesting and rewarding period to have stuck with one character for so long. It's quite rare for me.
Yeah, that's good.
Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor was definitely my favourite, followed by Frank Terry, but Sam Humphries on Harley has definitely been subpar most of the time. Then we had some news here. Sam Raimi is directing his first horror movie in a decade. As a Sam Raimi fan who loves the Evil Deads and also the Spider-Mans, I am really looking forward to, you know, what he does now. Did he do that movie, what was it called, Bubba Tep or something?
Bubba Hotep.
Yeah.
I think he
did. I love that movie. I think that was a Sam Raimi movie. I could be wrong.
He did Drag Me to Hell, didn't he, which was okay.
I saw that as well, yeah.
No, he didn't do that.
Oh. He must have been a producer on that because he was involved somewhere. What's it called? Bubba Hotep.
Yeah, Bubba Hotep. Let's look, Sam.
He was definitely involved somewhere. I think he might have been a producer. No?
I didn't see him anywhere.
Wowee. Okay. Yeah. Maybe I'm just thinking that because it had Bruce Campbell in it.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, that might have been my connection. You're right. I look here, and I always thought that Sam Raimi was involved in that, but no.
Well, they go together a lot, so...
Yeah. It's a good movie. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about it.
Yeah. Look, dude, you throw it on a Friday night, a Saturday night, it's a good time in the cinemas, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I ask you kind of a personal question? Are you single, or are you a good girlfriend or something? Wow, man. So you're just living the dream. Like... Because for me, I have to, you know, there's always like that, you know, in a relationship, there's a two-way street. You've always got to kind of campaign to get a movie on, you know what I mean? You take turns kind of thing. But if you're single, you're just watching whatever you want all the time.
Pretty much. I mean, I watch stuff on my laptop anyway, so.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Look, I mean, I'm 45. I'm over the hill, you know. And, you know, I'm so used to the negotiation game. Like the other day when we were on holiday, I negotiated into a situation where I got Michelle to watch Dawn of the Dead, the 1978 version. That cost me some serious brownie points, let me tell you.
And she hated it, didn't she?
She qualified it later by saying it wasn't quite hatred, but she was just completely bored.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, Michelle likes her movies nice and fast.
That must have hurt.
Yeah. No, it was okay. Not really, because I got to watch it, so I was fine.
Yeah, fair enough.
I was actually fine, man. I was thrilled to get it across the line because we're away. You know, you've got that free night. There's no responsibilities. You're in the hotel room. You're both exhausted.
Yeah.
No, I got to watch the movie, and it was the extended cut, which I'd never seen before. So, no, I had a good time.
Okay, cool.
I was just impressed she didn't fall asleep. Because I thought she'd fall asleep. She's like lying in bed with one head on the pillow watching it with like one eye, but she never fell asleep through the whole thing.
Wow.
So it can't have been that bad. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is getting re-released with 10 minutes of new footage. This is a... This actually pisses me off, this new tradition of just putting films back into cinemas like a couple of months later. Yes, yes.
Ugh,
I hate it, man. I hate it. The same as Once Upon a Deadpool did the same thing. And, see, for me...
Endgame as well.
Yeah, I didn't even bother with Endgame.
But that was awful. Like the new footage was like an unfinished, deleted scene and a tribute to Stan Lee just fucking monetizing off his death, of course.
What, an unfinished scene? Like not even like with special effects or something?
There were special effects, but they were like half done.
Oh, great. Gee, yeah. thanks Disney.
End of the credits. And that it was a terrible scene and like tribute to Stan Lee. And that was the only new footage they had. It was the biggest fucking money-grubbing bullshit. Like,
actually, I agree with you. I think it's terrible. I am a huge Deadpool fan. But when they did Once Upon a Deadpool and put it back in cinemas, I refused to go and support that with my money, you know?
Yeah.
Because to me, that is just a cash grab. And like, this is a cash grab. Like, on Netflix, sure. Put it out with new footage. Or on the DVD, put it out with new footage. But, like, to put it back in cinemas, like, I watched the movie. We reviewed it, didn't we? You and I discussed it, I think.
Once Upon a Time? Yeah.
Yeah. We both enjoyed it. I know we had some criticism and stuff, but, like, it was a very rich and full movie already. Like, I'll gladly watch it on streaming with extra footage, but I'm not going back in cinemas for it.
Yeah, no way. Like, I liked it. I didn't like it that much. And 10 minutes of new footage. Yeah. Jesus, like, what is it, just more...
It was
like,
already a very long, slow movie, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was a very rich movie, and it took its time. Really, that should be for the DVD or Blu-ray or Netflix, if they put it on Netflix, which they will do. He's already released, like, different cuts of Hideous Eight before as well.
Hateful Eight. Aren't Brad Pitt and Leo getting Oscar noms for this movie?
I'm not surprised.
Really? That doesn't make any sense to me. Like, they were fine in the movie, but there's nothing I consider in that movie that's, like, an Oscar-worthy performance. Like, Brad Pitt
Tarantino.
Was just being, like...
Yeah.
Brad Pitt and Leo was just being, like, a kind of sad person. It's probably
agree with you. It's not great, but it's Tarantino. It's like Woody Allen used to get a nomination every single...
But, like, I think the actors are getting the nominations.
Yeah. I think they're helped by the fact it's a Tarantino movie, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
And it's also set in Hollywood, so they can all sniff their own farts and...
Yeah, I've said before on the Signal many times, people are probably bored of this. I am very anti the award system. I refuse to get excited by it. That news is greeted by me with a shrug, really, frankly. It's a it's a self-serving, corrupt, like, stupid, like, thing. And the way ordinary citizens get excited about it, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, why would I be excited, really? Like... Buy.
Yeah,
like a lot of good movies haven't won Oscars, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's just that's where I get to a point, Connor, where I just think like society is like trying to sort of like drill into you that you should care about certain things, and I'm like, no, I refuse to.
Oh,
fuck
definitely.
You know, like fuck you guys. Like I won't. Like Brad Pitt's nominated for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Wow, there must be, if he wins, there's got to be some pretty weak nominations he's against. Because, as you said, he was fine, but he was just Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
It was a good performance by Brad Pitt. Good is the operative word.
Yeah.
And Leo, I would say, was probably slightly worse than Brad Pitt. Mm. And certainly not worthy of an Oscar.
Yeah.
In my eyes.
He just but cried like a baby. I mean,
But the Academy, though, loves Tarantino movies. You know what I'm saying? The Academy has its own biases. Mm. This is why I don't play the game. I refuse to play the game of the award game. I think it's one of the biggest. And these days, really, all the studios care about is for award season, they can put the movies back out into the cinemas.
Yeah.
That's really why the studios care about it, because it puts hype onto their movies. Like, it gives them some Oscar buzz, and so they get another run in cinemas. Like, whoopee-doo. You know, if I was an investor in the companies, I'd be more interested. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm not an investor, and I don't own stock in any of the studios, so fuck them. Like, really. I enjoyed the movie, don't get me wrong. I'll watch it again. It's also a movie that I want to take a break from, because it was so long, and it drew me into the world, a world that I love, by the way, that period of Hollywood.
Yeah.
I want to... like take time off it now and then come back to it again in a couple of months on Netflix. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if I'll do that. Like, I liked it, but I thought it, in terms of the Tarantino movies, I think it's one of the weaker ones.
Sure. I wouldn't say it's as weak as Death Proof. And
Death Proof's the only one I haven't seen, actually. But
it's okay.
Yeah, I've never heard anyone say it's good.
But it has Kurt Russell in it.
It's not bad. It's not like Tarantino movies. I don't think any of them are very bad at all. Like it's a lesser Tarantino film. It's not a very important movie. It's like a lesser Scorsese movie, which he has some, where it's just not. It's not quite going for the same heights that he normally goes for. It's a bit less ambitious.
Yeah.
But I actually have always felt that Kill Bill is a little overrated. You know?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and I don't know. I liked Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but I love that period. Like, I hope that in these extra scenes he has Dean Martin in them, because we know he shot the scenes with Dean Martin.
Yeah, he might actually.
Well, see, then I'd be interested. Not enough to go and watch it in cinemas, but definitely enough to watch it on Netflix. So anyway, I guess we'll watch this space on that. This is interesting. The next entry in the critically acclaimed Batman Arkham video game franchise is rumoured, and I use the word rumoured, to be titled Batman Arkham Legacy. Furthermore, the game's roster could include the entire Bat family as playable characters.
I like the Arkham games, but my reaction to this was a groan and another one.
Why?
Well, because, like, there's been rumours for, like, the past... Ever since Arkham Knight came out, there's just been constant rumours.
Sure.
Every year around the time E3 comes around, they start rumours that Rocksteady are doing a Superman game. And they keep starting rumours, they keep starting rumours. It's like clockwork, man. And everyone gets really excited.
And a Turtles game as well. A Turtles game as well was rumoured by Rocksteady.
There's even clickbait articles which, like, pretty much... Clickbait videos, like, from What Culture that were, like, quote-unquote confirming it. And, of course, it turns out they say, oh, no, we're not doing a Superman game. Yeah. And it's like, well, then what are they doing? Maybe Justice League. I could do a Justice League. And then it's like, wait, another Batman one. Oh, my God. We've already had four. Like, they're good. If they do another Batman one, I'll play it. But fuck. Just, God.
I get your point. I get your point. You want a bit of diversity.
They keep having little Superman Easter eggs in their games. And it's like, ooh, are they going to work on that next? And they mention him. And then it's like, yeah. But the thing that would... make me not completely pissed off about this is playing as the entire Bat family would be good.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Playing as the Robins, playing as Nightwing, playing as perhaps Black Canary, you know?
Yeah, so, you know, I think if they did do another Batman game, this is a step in the right direction. More playable characters and stuff, so maybe they can do games with other characters in the future.
Spoiler, you know, there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
The Robins, all the different Robins.
Yeah.
I think it could be cool. But I get your point. I think the problem you have there is Batman is a street-level character, and he's the most popular comic book character of all time, you know, really. And hence what makes him so adaptable to a game. A Superman game, has to be a lot more ambitious.
People have proven that would be easy to do, though.
Yeah.
Like, because there's like a free game on Steam you can play, and it's essentially you just fly around in Superman with super strength, and the controls fine, you feel powerful and stuff, and it's like, it's not just like we're not getting a Superman game. Hell, I'd play a Green Lantern game, a Flash game, whatever.
Sure.
It's just we're only getting Batman games. Like, at least Marvel, even Marvel's branching out. You know,
but
they're
that's
doing...
because Batman's been driven into the public consciousness totally. You know, like. But I think that's part of it. Like, Batman's been kind of memory implanted at a young age of most kids, you know, through X amount of years in the media. Whereas, like, you know, Justice League, for example, it's kind of only caught on more recently. The Marvel movies are all more recent. Batman's been around in the zeitgeist since, like, the 80s, you know?
Yeah, but, like, there's been other, like, DC games besides Batman before.
Yeah.
You know, but now it's like, I guess the closest we have is Injustice, which is like where you get to play as everyone.
Which is fun, I think.
It's fun. It's annoying like that Catwoman. You have to play as like evil, edgy versions, but still.
Yes.
It's like I just wish they'd take a leaf from Marvel, and I'd pretty much never say that. But, you know, they have their Spider-Man game, right? Their Spider-Man is DC's Batman, you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Now they're doing like. An Avengers game, which looks like crap, but still they're trying new stuff, and I like video games.
They're only just trying new stuff now. It's been years since Marvel have really tried to do a console
game. I guess it's just been so long since Arkham Knight, and I've been curious. Like, I knew that their new game wouldn't be Superman, but I've been curious as to what it'll be, and then if I hear it's just another Batman game, so why all the secrecy?
Well, this is only a rumor as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But
So this is... I get your point. I was surprised...
I'll play it.
I think that's why they're doing it, man, if I can be honest with you, because the last one sold so many copies, you know, really. Yeah. And you know how things are these days. Like, if something's popular, they'll milk it and 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 milk it, basically. That they'll, you know, and I understand that, but I got more excited when they said they were going to do a Turtles game, which I think was complete bullshit, but I got excited.
Yeah, I remember that rumor, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting idea. Like, I'd love to see the Turtles. I wouldn't mind seeing a Superman or Justice League movie at all, a game at all. I think it'd be awesome. Like,
yeah.
Proper Justice League game would be fucking cool. Did you ever play DC Online?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, yeah. I was into that for a while. I thought that was a pretty interesting kind of take.
But that's more evidence you can make kind of Superman game, because they got the flying and the combat pretty much.
Yeah, and the running. I had a character that ran up the walls and stuff.
Super speed, yeah, that was awesome.
It was fun, man. I thought that was... You're right. I mean, of course they could fucking make it. You know, like, Superman's got an enormous rogues gallery of superpower characters that you could construct a game around. It's not that hard.
Bunch of power levels you can choose from as well. Yeah, you can make them more street level.
There's plenty of... you're a Superman fan, so you know this, but for the listeners out there who are more casual, there's plenty of Superman kind of villains that could kind of match him for power levels. When you go to certain, you know, if you go up against a Mongol or something in the game, they can make him heaps more powerful.
Yeah, Superman's villains can kill him. Like,
yeah, Metallo. There's plenty of, like, I get your point. Look, a Superman game is quite possible. Like, they could definitely do it. I'm sort of surprised they haven't done it.
They were doing one, I think, in like the late 2000s. And I was going to have Brainiac, and there's like concept art and everything, but they ended up scrapping it, unfortunately, because it looked quite good. So.
Well, man, all I'll say is stay patient, dude, because, like, these things come in ebbs and flows, you know? Yeah. Like, that's just what it's like.
But, like, back to Arkham Legacy, like, you know, I think it is, as much as my griping, I do think, you know, as I said, it's the right step if they're doing another Batman game, and I'd like to play as Nightwing, you know?
Would you?
I think that'd be cool. Yeah. He's my favourite Robin.
He's pretty cool. I'd probably play as Catwoman or one of the Robins. I also like Nightwing as well.
Yeah.
Have you read Chuck Dixon's Nightwing run?
I have read... Actually, for Last Sons of Krypton, I read a couple of issues of it. And
it's a good run. It's a damn good run.
Nightwing Year One as well.
Yes, that's good too. His first 70-issue run on Nightwing, it's excellent, man, if you like Nightwing.
Yeah, 70
it's issues. It's the best. He wrote 70 issues of Nightwing. The first miniseries, I believe, was by Marv Wolfman, who did, like, the miniseries, and then Chuck took over for the ongoing and wrote 70 issues. He came back later on to do the Year One storyline.
Yeah, in Bloodhaven, Nightwing's little city. Didn't that blow up at some point?
After Chuck left the title, they actually nuked it or something.
Well, that must have sucked for him.
Yeah, I think it did. I think it was quite an unhappy parting of ways. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anyway, but regardless, the 70-issue run is really good, and I believe the first half of it's collected in trade, but all of it's available digitally as well on Comixology.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I just recommend that if you're a Nightwing fan. It's easily the best Nightwing I've read. I actually reviewed Nightwing for a couple of years on Batman Universe as well.
Nightwing's a character on my list, and if I like when I start with him, I would start with the Chuck Dixon stuff.
I think you'll enjoy it. It's a good read, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I enjoyed the issues I read for Larson's Krypton, so...
Yeah, that were the days, man. That were the days when DC was pumping out quality titles across the Batman family, basically.
Mm.
As opposed to these days where we're putting up with some bullshit, which I'll bring up later in the show.
Mm.
Where we've got one fucking villain that Batman ever seems to fight, the Batman who laughs. Jesus Christ. Like, honestly, are these writers aware there are other villains out there than the Batman who laughs?
Yeah, we've been talking about the old... BMWL on LSK a bit as well. A bit sick of him. I'm fucking sick of... Ooh, he's 15 steps ahead. It's like, yeah, I get it. He's smart.
But he's always not that good. It's just an evil Batman. Like, has anyone ever realised that? Like, it's just... We get it. It's Batman mixed with the Joker. We get it. And they talk about him like it's like, oh, my God, he's so amazing. Like,
well, that's... It's often what I've said about... Superman, like, if you make him evil, then he's not interesting anymore. It's the same with Batman. Mm. If you make him evil, then I just don't find him interesting anymore. You know,
I do to a point.
To me,
he's just completely overexposed.
Yeah, that too. I mean, like, okay, it was a cool concept. I like the idea of, like, a Bruce Wayne that's gone completely nuts. But, you know, he's just been so... He's been around so much. And, like, if it's about evil Batman stories, I prefer, like, Batman just giving into his fascist tendencies, you know?
Yeah. Like in Dark Knight and stuff.
Yeah, like something that would actually sort of... You know,
Broken City.
Has something to do with the character's traits that already exist instead of, like, Joker virus.
I'll mention it later in the show, but Batman Who Laughs, as a good concept, even a decent villain, but they're using him so often.
Yeah.
And he's not as good as the Joker. Like, he's a lot worse than the Joker.
Yeah.
Like, the Joker's a better character. Mixing Batman and Joker didn't make it into a better character than Joker. He's still, you know, like it's just like, imagine Batman, but he's infected with the Joker serum, and you're like, oh, shock horror, and then that's it.
What if Spider-Man was Green Goblin?
Yeah, wow. But then we'll put Spider-Man as Green Goblin in every fucking issue of every fucking spin-off title for the next 5 years and just try to drum the people's heads. Like, it just annoys me. Like, whoever created Batman Who Laughs must be loving it if they're getting some sort of a percentage.
I mean, like, they're having... The whole thing they're hyping up is Lex Luthor versus Batman Who Laughs, and I hope Lex Luthor goddamn curb stomps him.
So do I.
I'm on Team Lex for this one. Like...
I'm a Team Lex a million times over when it comes to Batman Who Laughs. So I hope he annihilates him.
Disintegrates him.
I hope actually he ends the problem for us all.
Like, I think Lex has the powers of Martian Manhunter right now, so the dude's traveling across multiverses and stuff.
Lex is definitely going next level at this point in time. The highly anticipated... This is funny. The highly anticipated Pirates of the Caribbean reboot is reportedly in development once again, this time with Chernobyl creator Craig Maxson leading the charge. Now, I haven't watched Chernobyl, but my boss at work has, and she said it's a very dark, somber piece. Interesting that he's getting involved with pirates.
Well, you know, people aren't limited to, like, one sort of genre.
Very true. And I believe this guy had done comedy and stuff before, previously.
Yeah. Man, why, like, reboot, something new!
Yeah. Reboot a very tied Pirates of the Caribbean franchise as well, you know?
Or just, you can make a Pirates of the Caribbean with, like, different Pirates of the Caribbean, you know?
I think that's what they're doing.
Oh, okay, but that, yeah.
Right. Well, they're definitely doing it without Johnny Depp, put it that way.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to have the others, or if it's going to be a complete reboot. I think it might be a complete reboot.
Right.
I won't be watching it, because I found after the second Pirates movie I was completely bored of the Pirates of the Caribbean.
I haven't watched any since the third one, because it seems to like conclude the story. So
you have not missed much at all, I don't think, man.
Yeah.
How about this? Spawn 300 was the most ordered comic in September 2019.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and it pushed Image's comics dollar market share above 11%. So that's actually a pretty astounding sort of stat.
It is.
This was fascinating. There was an AI-generated Batman screenplay that basically this guy had an AI program, and he made the AI read, like, hundreds of thousands of issues, I believe, of, Batman, like hundreds of thousands of pages or something. And then it did its own script. It wrote its own script, and this guy's converted it into a comic. I actually read a bit of it. It's a nutty comic, dude. It's fucking funny, man.
The script itself is funny. Like, have you read the AI script or some of it?
No, I just read the comic bit. The comic.
Oh man, it's hilarious. Like it's kind of like it kind of reads like a parody of really bad Batman runs.
Yeah.
it's like, oh no, Joker reminded me parents are dead.
I like the bit where he goes, "Sometimes I'm Bruce Wayne, sometimes I'm Batman, but I'm always an orphan."
Yeah. I mean,
that's how it starts.
It's stuff like that. And, like, you see stuff like that in actual bad Batman books. Worded that badly, but, you know, doing the same thing.
There's a fucking formula they use on Batman all the time. Like, yeah. I think it's interesting. No, I wouldn't mind reading the actual full script. Like, I'd like to sit down and read that. Now, here we go. I wonder what you'd think of this, because listeners to The Signal, everyone knows me with Superman. I'm a limited dose of Superman guy. Like, I don't mind soups at all, but I'm certainly limited doses. Connor, you're a downright, flat-out Superman lover, aren't you?
Totally. Okay. Not only my favorite comic book character, but my favorite character of all time. So
cool. Now, it looks like DC Comics are really going ahead with Superman revealing Clark Kent as his secret identity. Again, now, what's your take on this? And you can also dovetail this into the conversation about Bendis in general, if you want.
DC, if you want to sell comics, Just put good writers on. It's not fucking rocket science. Like, for God's sake, he lost his identity like 5 years ago and you're doing it again. All they're doing is just sales boost. They're so useless. You know, this is just like the 5G stuff with John Kent, Luke Fox. They're just doing these stupid things to boost sales. And it's like, just put a good writer on and tell some good stories, okay? That's all people want. That's
very
all
true.
People want. But no, they always do these stupid-ass events to try and sell books. And, you know, and there's also the thing that Bendis came out and said, oh, they wanted me to do this all along.
Right.
But they wanted me to get some street cred writing Superman first. I'm like, okay, so you fucking lied to us then.
So what's happening? So is the big reveal going to be that Superman comes out and says he's Clark Kent? Because there's already suspicion, I guess, because they saw Superman kissing Lois. Is that what's the trigger?
Maybe Leviathan do it or something.
Oh God, Leviathan, that dreaded word. Yeah. That event where nothing seems to happen.
Like, I read issue 5 and nothing's happening still. Like, Superman's terrible. Actually, it's pretty funny. Superman's at the Leviathan base and he's like,
what do I do?
Leviathan's like, oh, we're on your side, man. We just wanted to do this while you're in space. You weren't supposed to be on Earth. And I'm like, yeah, okay.
This sounds like the worst event of all time. Bendis has really lowered his own. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
And, you know, so next issue, the last issue, we'll finally see who he is, and I just won't, like, there's no, it doesn't matter who it's going to be. It's not going to justify all this bullcrap.
What if it's Hush?
Fuck. What if it's the Batman Who Laughs?
Yeah, it's the Batman Who Laughs. Yeah, that would actually be funny. Yeah. Leviathan just feels like, firstly, its name, Event Leviathan, I never liked. And I read like 3 issues of the, you know, the series, and I was just like, this is some of the dullest comics I've ever read.
It's bad, and the greatest detectives on the planet come off as morons. Like,
yeah, they're just standing around kind of talking, and it's actually one of Bendis's. I've realized I'm not a fan of modern Bendis. I like Bendis back in the day, but this modern Bendis, he just feels like he's really got nothing left. Like, you know, like, it's just, like, his ideas are sort of paper thin, you know, like, they're just not very good. It feels like he's overextended, is what I'm trying to say.
The start of his action, the first 6 issues of his Action Comics was good. That's, like, the only good stuff he's done that I've seen at DC so far.
I think we're stuck with him, though.
He was doing, like, the investigative journalism that Clark does as a big part of the sort of issue. Which was nice, but, you know, now he's just gone pants on head after those 6 issues. And it's like, you know, he did make an argument like, oh, but there's so many more stories you can tell once his identity is revealed. And it's like, look, that worked for Daredevil, but I think that was kind of a fluke as well. And also, that's not the reason you guys are doing it. You guys are doing it to boost sales. Like,
yeah, you want to get in the news again. You want to get Superman back in the news cycle.
And it's worked. He's been in the news cycle.
Yeah.
Like, actual news that's been in.
Yeah, mainstream news.
Yeah, it's just like, fuck, God. Lazy,
I don't know. I just think, I actually think Bendis is the wrong person to be on the title. I think, I wonder what his numbers like. Do you have any idea what the numbers of Superman are like at the moment?
I think they were good initially, but I think they've definitely gone down. Like, I mean, you know, there's other writers at DC. Put Scott Snyder on. I'd read he did a good job with Superman Unchained.
Sure.
You know, if Scott Snyder can keep his, like, you know, restrain himself from using the Batman Who Laughs in one story.
Or his shitty narration that he always uses.
Yeah. You know, before Tom Taylor became hated by everyone, I think he would have been a good choice to boost sales for Superman.
I like Tom Taylor.
And Tom Taylor's obviously interested in the character, so, you know, he'd be a good fit, even if you wrote him horribly in Heroes in Crisis.
Oh, God, I just hope if Bendis goes off Superman, though, I just pray he doesn't wind up on Batman, which is where I think he would go. Oh, no, I mean, seriously, like, I'm not a fan of Tom King, but I'll take Tom King's, like, shitty version of Batman over Bendis's Batman.
If Bendis goes anywhere, it's going to be Batman or it's going to be Green Lantern. It's going to be one of those two.
Go to Green Lantern. That'll be fine with me. I don't
Morrison's
care.
Got his hooks in Green Lantern for at least another 12 issues after Black Bull. So,
a writer of actual vision and talent as opposed to Bendis. Like, Bendis, I just think Bendis is like a ball player who's just way past his prime. And he's like lost his pitch. And he was good once, but I just think he doesn't he doesn't have it anymore, like, frankly. And I read a lot of good Bendis, and I read his stuff now, and I'm like, this is woefully bad.
Man, I read those first six issues of Action, and I'm like, maybe Bendis has it again. And then he's just... Yeah. It's like a different person started writing.
I think he just wrote too many comics, and he ran out of ideas.
Yeah,
really?
Maybe.
I really do.
But the amount of bloody OCs he has running around now as well. One like Naomi or whatever just showed up in Action Comics and completely hijacked the issue.
Yeah,
and I'm
A very dull character. We did an issue of her of the Naomi book, and it was almost unreadable.
She just turns up in an issue of Action Comics, and then it's all about her. And then like towards the end of the issue, Superman's like, "Oh, that's right, I have a main plot that I should go to." And then he gets.
I wish she turned up and killed herself. That would have actually been something worthwhile.
we'll get you know. I don't know, but
I just can't deal with it. It's too much.
Yeah,
it's too much Bendis. It's watered down Bendis. It's like if Bendis, like, here's something that would never happen. If Bendis only had two titles a month, I reckon he'd be a lot better.
Yeah,
but his problem is, I think, that he's so prolific. He does what Chuck Dixon did in terms of volume, but Chuck kept quality, whereas Bendis sacrifices quality for sheer churning out quantity, and that's the problem. He's stretched too thin. And yeah. I reckon if he dialed it down, he'd actually be quite good again. But the problem is he's got so many scripts he writes ahead of the deadlines. Like, he's very prolific. He's very successful. On that angle, I give it to him. You're prolific, you're successful, you must sell a number of titles. But is it good? No, it's not. It's not good at all, actually. It's actually quite poor.
Where did Greg Pak go? He was writing a killer Superman in New 52. Yeah. He was writing an awesome...
I think they all got chased off by Bendis, who's taken... Doesn't Bendis write, like, at least two of the Superman main titles now?
Yeah, he writes Superman in Action Comics. One, yeah. It was good at the start, because one was, like, cosmic and one was street level, but now it's, like, one's about John and one's about Leviathan or Naomi. So,
or Naomi. Yeah. Naomi. God. I pity you reading about Naomi, because she was woeful. We did an issue of her in like, an episode. It was one of the worst issues we've ever done.
Yeah, it was really, like, I mean, honestly, like, I can't wait till John takes over as Superman so I can stop buying the damn things and save
some
money.
I wanted to segue into the next item here. So as well as the Secret Identity stuff, DC seem to be, and I haven't seen this 100% confirmed, they seem to be indicating that John will take over as Superman in the mainstream continuity and Luke Fox will take over as Batman. Now, I don't really believe Luke Fox is going to be Batman for too long, but... What's your reaction to both of these news?
Well, I hope John's not Superman. He hasn't earned it.
He's a blank character to me. He just strikes me as a good boy whenever I read him. It's just like, he's just a good kid.
I can't remember who I was saying this to. I think it might have been you, that I would like Connor Kent, Superboy. Like, if we
That
had,
would be interesting.
If we had to pick someone to take the mantle of Superman for a while, he would be an interesting choice because of his background. You know, he's a clone of Lex and Superman. His power sets work a bit different.
Yeah.
And he already has a history with Superman. Like, he's a fully fleshed out character with an interesting personality. And I think he's a worthy successor to the mantle. He's proven
himself.
Is he
still around? Is he still around in Superman comics these days?
Funnily enough, Bendis brought him back in Young Justice. So,
okay. So he's around. He's a contender.
Yeah, and he's proved himself. Like, he's... You know, he's had runs. He's fought villains. He's saved people.
He was a good character back in the day, man. I read a lot of him in Young Justice when Peter David was writing him and stuff, and Titans.
Yeah, but now John's going to be Superman. I'm like, well, I don't care about John. John's bland.
Yeah. Almost no character to John, actually.
If John exists to explore Superman being a dad, okay, I'm cool with that. But when the stories start focusing on John himself, like, he's just a non-character, you know?
Yeah, if I compare him to Damien, Damien is about a billion times more interesting than John.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean...
The difference is one of them has actual characters, character traits, and something... John just strikes me as he's just like a good young kid. Like, that's it. Like, it's like he's lowest... And, like, if you met him, it'd just be like the little kid, and one day he might grow up and be something really amazing, but right now he's just a good sort of loyal kid, and that's about it, you know? Like...
Yeah, he's...
There's not much more to it.
There's other people who could take the mantle up. And, I can't remember, back before New 52, there was a brief stint where Superman adopted a child he found in the Phantom Zone, which turned out to be Zod's child. And that was interesting as well, you know.
That sounds quite interesting.
Explored, like, Superman trying to be a father with Lois and, you know, a Zod. which is, but right. Yeah, like, I don't know, man. I mean, it just, again, you know, this is just sales gimmick. But I don't know how this is going to sell books. If people hear Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent are Batman and Superman, they're probably not going to, you know, they're not going to be like, ooh.
I don't think that Luke Fox will stay as Batman for too long, mate, to be honest. I don't. Batman, they're not going to mess with for very long at all. Like, Bruce Wayne needs to be Batman. Batman needs to be Bruce Wayne for a lot of reasons beyond just the comics line. They might experiment for a year, but like when Azrael was Batman.
Yeah.
But like at a certain level at Warner's, they're not going to want Luke Fox to be Batman in the comics for too long. And if they do, people will just desert the title because they're already unhappy with Tom King. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People are main core Batman fans are very unhappy with Tom King's kind of below average Batman run. And they need a good writer on there. And they, I pray to sweet Jesus that these ideas are for some alternate timeline, which I think would be totally cool. Like if it was just in another universe.
Yeah.
I just hope to God that this isn't their plan for the future because it won't work.
Yeah.
You know? If it's just a marketing stunt, that's okay. I could do it for 6 months. But, long-term, Luke Fox can't be Batman, I'm sorry. Luke Fox can be another fucking hero in the Batman family. That's fine.
Yeah.
And as for John Kent, he's amazingly... People say Superman's bland. John Kent is actually bland.
Yeah.
You know? He's very bland.
Yeah. He's had, you know, every Superman origin story has Clark Kent growing as a person and going through character development. He has struggles and stuff. John Kent is just there. Like, he hasn't really changed as a person or anything that I've seen. You know, there's stuff like, oh, he got rejected by the Teen Titans and he went out with his crazy grandpa. But, like, God, he doesn't feel that different. I don't feel like he's become... Anyway.
I've read it probably scattered across about 10 to 20 issues of John Kent, and he's one of the most boring characters that I can think of, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of characters like him, but, like, if he's going to be Superman, get ready for the Snore Patrol, you know?
Yeah.
And get ready for Superman coming back quite shortly afterwards as well.
Kingdom Come. Like, I mean, I'm all for making Superman older. That'd be cool. I don't know. And that's the other thing, like, Superman, I know he does sometimes, but generally, you know, it's kind of out of character for him to, like, retire. It's not like he's, you know, he's going to get too old in the near future.
No. What if it was a time-displaced Kingdom Come Superman or Superman? Would you like that?
Yeah, no, I'd read that. It'd be interesting.
I think that'd be cool.
Yeah.
The Golden Age Superman, you know?
Oh, yeah, I'd read that. He's dead, so...
But I'm just... Anything's possible. Like,
totally,
John Kent sounds terrible. Has Bendis actually come out and said they're definitely doing it? Has someone at DC said this is definitely happening and it's happening on this date kind of thing?
I'm not sure.
Because that's what I was trying to find out with Batman. I think Batman they're going to be a lot less experimental with. They might take a few more chances with Superman, but Batman fans aren't going to like it if Luke Fox stays Batman for too long.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing that baffles me about Batman is, like, out of everyone, why Luke Fox? You have...
Yeah, he's terrible.
You have a bunch of Robins and Nightwing to take the mantle. Why would Luke Fox take the mantle?
You have Damian, his son.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense to me. It just seems like he chose, like, the least interesting possible successor to take over.
I know. I can't understand it at all. That's why I think it's going to be a temporary fix, you know?
Yeah.
Just a temporary sort of thing. Now, okay, so we've covered that. Now, did you hear this? Tony Harris, the artist of Starman, destroyed some art rather than give it to a customer who wanted a refund. this guy was into him for about $1,200 for some sketches or something and some Kickstarter stuff and hadn't received his product, allegedly. And then Tony Harris' response was to destroy the art, to burn it, and rather than complete it.
Yeah.
Pretty full on.
Yeah, it kind of seems like a obsessive artist dick move. I don't know. I don't know enough about the situation.
I read it on Bleeding Cool, and it was a bit of a hit piece on Tony Harris, but the whole thing was a bit odd. Certainly the customer had been ripped off a bit, it seemed like. Like, it's not normal to wait, like, 5 or 6 years for someone to complete a piece of art, you know? Yeah. And if I gave $1,200 to Tony Harris and hadn't got my artwork within, say, a 6-month period, I'd get the shits.
Oh, totally. You're like, fuck you, Tony Harris.
I wouldn't, yeah, like, I, that's about the same with anyone. If I had a close personal relationship with them and they took a bit longer due to some personal stuff, no problems at all. But if it was just a pure business transaction, I would start to get the shits,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, I thought it was interesting. These facsimile editions, have you seen these kind of stuff? So Incredible Hulk 180, which features the first appearance of Wolverine when he jumps out from behind the bush, is getting a facsimile edition. These editions, Connor, they have the same ads and stuff as the original issue had. So yeah, they're reprinted like the original issues were back in the day, exactly, like complete with the ads and everything. And they're really catching on fire. Apparently, Didio said at DC, the facsimile editions are outselling the current comics and stuff like that.
Yeah, like these are the ones that they just have on the counter at the LCS, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I picked up the first Incredible Hulk and a Swamp Thing.
And Incredible Hulk 181, which has Hulk and Wolverine fighting, already had an edition. And now the 180 is getting an edition as well. I reckon it'd be pretty cool to own it, actually. And yeah, to put it up on the wall, maybe in a case or something, you know?
Yeah. I like that they're doing this.
Yeah, I do too. I do too.
One of the few things that I like them doing these days.
Isn't it funny that it's like when they manage to sort of repackage the past, we prefer it to the current shit, you know? Marvel Comics announced an X-Men Fantastic Four. It's about a four-issue miniseries, I believe, by Chip Zdarsky and Terry Dodson at a London Comic Con over the weekend.
Cool.
Which I think is interesting. They also announced Spider-Man Noir at the same Comic Con by Margaret Stoll and Guan Ferreira.
Right.
I've read the Spider-Man first two. Spider-Man Noir is the character that's in Into the Spider-Verse, played by Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it would be interesting, I think. This was funny. Tony Isabella, the one of the creators of Black Lightning, called Batman toxic, says the character is ruining DC Comics. This guy fucking doesn't hold back, Tony Isabella.
No, he doesn't. I understand that opinion, definitely. Mm.
Yeah. It's a pretty full-on opinion, though. Like, Batman toxic.
I don't think the character is ruining DC Comics. DC Comics overusing, like, just not taking chances with other characters is ruining DC Comics. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah. No, I get you. Yeah. There's a certain logic to the argument, is what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for God's sake, like, look, we're getting, you know, we're always getting Batman movies. We're always getting Batman video games and stuff. Like, Batman's never going to die. And, like, you know, that's fine, but, like,
yeah,
it's just, as we said before, they don't take chances with other stuff.
Well, it's like my good friend Richard, okay? Richard is a hardcore comics guy, okay? Good mate of mine. And it just so happens that I'm, you know me, I'm Bat family centric. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he is a massive Green Lantern fan. And he's always said this. He goes, it's not that he dislikes Batman. It's just he dislikes how much focus there is on Batman and how much Batman product and spin-offs there are that other characters like Green Lantern sort of get shortchanged a lot of the time.
I'm in the exact same boat as him, really.
No, I understand. I understand that. And look, this guy, Tony Isabella, he quite often has points of difference with DC Comics, you know?
Yeah.
He's quite a sort of full-on individual, I believe. Now, but an interesting point of view. I mean, just because it's a bit controversial doesn't make it wrong, you know?
Yeah.
Showing with Dave and Connor, we had some good ones this week. This is stuff that's coming out. Star Wars Return of the Jedi adaptation trade paperback. Now, I've got a personal story here. One of the first comics I had was an adaptation of Return of the Jedi. And I had it in a... I didn't call it a trade paperback. It was more like a big comic. But I'm wondering if that adaptation, literally from the time that the movie came out, is what this is, or is this a more modern adaptation?
I was wondering that too.
I don't know, because if it is if it is the original, I might pick it up because I want to get the original thing that I had back in the day.
Yeah,
I'm actually going while we're talking. I'm going to the internet. Star Wars, Return of the Jedi adaptation. This is a new thing I'm doing on the Signal Corner where I'm doing live news. And I'm trying to get to the heart of things a lot quicker, and I'm using the internet. Blah, blah, blah. Forthcoming children's graphic novel adapting the events of the original trilogy. I don't know.
Okay, it doesn't sound like the original. It sounds like a new one.
Not happy. No, I'm not happy at all. No, now I'm very unhappy with life. Like, really? So it's not the original. It's by IDW? Author Alessandro Ferrari. Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Wow. It's got some of the worst cover art you'll ever see.
Oh, really?
It's really kind of like... I never really liked the Clone Wars animation style. It's kind of that animation style.
Oh, like the 2D?
Yeah, I don't know. You'd have to have... If you type it in, it's like this answers the question about whether it's the original or not, and it answers it in a very definitive way.
What am I typing in?
Just Star Wars Return of the Jedi graphic novel adaptation, and go to the Wikipedia page, okay, or whatever it is, the Star Wars fandom wiki. It's bad. It's real bad. It's so bad that my eyes almost burnt out when I saw it.
Ah, here it is.
Yeah. It's a low moment for the signal. I thought my childhood was going to be repackaged and I could buy it and I could own my childhood.
The art doesn't look great, but...
It looks fucking terrible is the answer that we're looking for.
I mean, I guess it says it's for kids though, right?
Yeah, I know. It's not for 45-year-olds trying to reclaim a piece of their past.
Oh, you still have the old comic though.
Sorry, what's that?
You still have the old comic though.
Yeah, but I don't own it anymore. Like, I bought it. Okay. I bought it in my mother bought it for me in 1983, dude.
But I don't like Dark Horse reprinted those and stuff. I'm sure you'd be able to.
Yeah, I guess.
Actually, I think Marvel, so you're saying there's still already hope. Did a.
Okay, all right.
So,
I think it was a Marvel comic, dude. I think it was a Marvel comic. Like, I don't know. My mother bought it for me. And I had it, and I also had Superman 3, the adaptation.
Wow.
And, I just remember, I remember this was a real crown jewel of, because I didn't collect comics at that age, I only had a few comics. Anyway, I guess, like, what I remember was, it was a really good adaptation of the actual movie.
Yeah.
At the time, as a kid who didn't really understand comics, I thought it was really cool that they managed to get so many of the beats of the movie in.
Yeah.
And did it so well?
A remastered adaptation of the comics, the comic you're talking about, was released November 10th, 2015.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
In a hardcover.
By Dark Horse?
Marvel. So this is the original 1984 comic that was published.
So I can buy it?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Four issues. We'll do that. All right. Well, there's some hope after all, Connor, isn't there? Just when we think we've given up hope, where we're in a post-apocalyptic, desolate world, you know, living by our guns and our wits, it turns out there's some hope after all. There's some sunshine at the end of the rainbow is what you're trying to say.
Yeah. Well, there's always a pot of gold.
I love that gold. Now, what else have we got? Daredevil, The Epic Collection, A Woman Called Widow.
Yes.
You put this one in?
So let me just double-check this, but I believe it collects some of the... like from when Black Widow first meets Daredevil and like collects that whole Jerry Conway, where they start sharing a title together.
Okay.
And
that's cool.
That was some great sort of 70s stuff.
I like 70s Black Widow.
Yeah, like so if you like Black Widow and you like Daredevil, or if you like both of them,
this is the book for you.
Yeah. Actually, I think it might collect her first appearance towards the end. It doesn't collect like their whole. Run together, but I'm guessing the next volume they do will probably collect the whole run of them
I think these epic collections are excellent.
Yeah.
I really think they're a great way of building up readers' collections of some periods that haven't been covered to death by the trade paperbacks. I think that they're a really good way for people to get entry points, and they're nice and big, so that what I like about them is they're big so that you can come to it fresh, and then by the end of the epic collection you're really invested in the world.
Yeah. Definitely.
So, yeah, I think that's a good one. Then we had The Berserk, the Deluxe Edition, Volume 3 hardcover. This is one of your books, isn't it?
Yes. I talked about Berserk on here before, but, like, the hardcover editions collect about 3 volumes of the manga in each hardcover edition. So if there's any Berserk heads out there, the next one is out, then you should pick
and
those up.
You were a big fan of Berserk when we did it on the show, yeah?
Yeah. So Volume 2 and 3, they'd be collecting the really awesome stuff.
The Golden Age stuff.
Yeah, the Golden Age.
I remember, Connor. I remember it well. Lucifer Omnibus. I believe this must be the Mike Carey run of Lucifer that spun out of the Sandman title in the 90s. Yeah,
I think so.
I actually own two of the sort of ones they did release this last time in sort of like the big thick paperbacks, and I haven't read it yet, But I do enjoy the show that it spun off from. So, and I like Lucifer in Sandman. He was a pretty interesting character in Sandman. Have you read it?
No. It's on my list, though. It's on my direct list after Swamp Thing, actually, and Hellblazer, before Hellblazer.
Which Swamp Thing? Alan Moore Swamp Thing, or what?
All of it. I read the Len Wein Swamp Thing and the run after that. And now
how was that?
It's awesome. It's, you know, just like old sort of, you know, like kind of horror, sometimes wacky sci-fi 70s goodness.
Cool. Yeah. I love that stuff, man.
Yeah.
It was a different world, wasn't it? It was a different age. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I miss now.
Well, they did call it the Bronze Age, so...
I like the Bronze Age, man.
Bronze Age. I love the Bronze Age. I did a poll for favourite versions of Superman the other day, and I chose Bronze Age.
He was at his best then. He was at his best then, if you ask me. I want to say this to you as well. You know the JLA? I don't know if I brought this up with you before. The JLA omnibuses in hardcover... There's three of them would complete the whole Bronze Age JLA. After the first two, fucking Dan DiDio can Volume 3.
No! DiDio!
Yeah, it really pisses me off. Because I've got the first two hardcovers, man. And can you imagine how much I want to put that third hardcover up by them?
Why'd he do that?
Because he's a... Yeah, I don't know.
He needs to go. He's got to fucking go. Like,
people have been saying that for a long time, man. He's not going anywhere. So
I have problems with some of John's shit, but seriously, put John's in charge. He's the only person that seems to know what he's doing in terms of... that pisses me off.
Yeah, it really pissed me off too. The Old God 1. This is my...
What's this book?
This is a fantasy book coming out from DC. I think it might be a Black Label book. It's basically like a fantasy story about... these characters that thought they'd defeated this old god or had told everyone they had defeated them, and then years later, like the next generation finds out that this old evil dark god is coming back across to, you know, start wreaking ruin across the world again, and they have to take up the fight against him. Like, I'm doing a pretty bad explanation of what the book is, but it sounded like a really cool fantasy-orientated book, which I think, you know, of original content, like original IP. And I was super excited when I read the sort of byline about it, and I revealed it on the show a couple of months ago. Well, the issue comes out this week, so we will cover it next week. The Old God Volume 1, Issue 1. And finally, one of my favourite movies of all time, Big Trouble in Little China, is getting a collector's edition with massive new features, like, for example, John Carpenter doing audio commentary, Kurt Russell doing audio commentary, plenty of extras and stuff. And it's coming out in a big Blu-ray edition over the next couple of months, I believe.
Awesome.
So I thought I'd put that one in there as well. It's Weekly Comics.
Here we go.
Now, here we go. A big, big issue of Weekly Comics this week. First one was Marauders by Jerry Duggan. This was the first one of the Marauder spin-off from the X-Men. Basically, X-Men with a nautical theme, led by Kitty Pryde, who can't go through the gates to Krakoa. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, Krakoa.
And look, I personally wasn't expecting much from this. Much better than I expected. And I will keep reading Marauders 1. I gave this a 7.5 out of 10.
I gave it a 5 because, as someone who's not up to date with all the X-Men stuff, it spends a lot of time just talking about that stuff instead of setting up, like, a kind of new series that a new reader can get into, so that's why I gave it a 5. But it does seem like an interesting premise, but as a first issue, I'm like, well, couldn't have started with her on the boat. I don't know.
No, I hear you. There is a lot of, not even set up, but as you say, sort of like aftermath conversation kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I didn't read the event, so...
Hey, I've got a question for you. I'm writing my new series of books, and I'm thinking of calling it the Aftermath series. Do you like that as a title line for a series?
The After... I guess it depends what it's about.
Sci-fi fantasy.
Yeah, the Aftermath seems like a good name.
I like the word Aftermath, and suddenly I thought it starts off at the end of a world, and then I thought I'd call it the Aftermath series.
Might be a common name, though, if you know what I mean.
Maybe.
Like, I'm just thinking if you want to, like, sell books, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I'm not sure
point.
How that all
good
works.
Point.
You're the guy who sells books, not me, so...
No, it's just an idea for my series name, really.
But yeah,
so then we had Swamp Thing Giant, Issue 1. Now, I didn't get a copy of this. Do you want to run us through it?
You didn't miss much. Unfortunately,
I actually can't stand Swamp Thing. I really dislike the character. Yeah.
Wow, he's my second favorite DC character. It's crazy.
Really?
Why do you hate Swamp Thing? How can you hate that lovable bag of moss?
I'm not into that stuff in the first place, and I just think he looks so lame.
What the horror stuff?
It's just not my cup of tea in the first place. I know Alan Moore would be fantastic on the title. We did the Volume 1 on the Signal, but the actual character, how he looks, I just can't get over it. Like, it just kills me. I just can't take it seriously.
Wow. I mean, yeah, I know. It's, yeah, that's kind of like me with, yeah, anyway. Okay, you definitely didn't miss much then. Because as a huge Swamp Thing fan, I didn't get much from this. I was excited for it. I gave it a 5 out of 10 because, like, a lot of the stories are, like, okay, but none of them were that memorable. The Zatanna story and John Constantine stories, I guess, were, like, okay as well. But, yeah.
I quite like those characters. I like Zatanna and John Constantine.
I'm probably going to not pick up the rest. I'll pick up another one and see how it is. And if it's not improved, then I'm just going to drop the book.
Yeah.
So
Now, was this the Walmart stuff?
Yes. Yeah. I thought it was just a special they were putting out, kind of like the Swamp Thing Winter special with Tom King. But no, this is like a Walmart giant. Which
I also heard that apparently they're doing these giant editions. They're actually doing original stuff now, so it's not tied into Walmart all the time as well.
I would guess so, because I couldn't get the Superman Tom King stuff. When they were coming out, but I can get the Swamp Thing stuff when it's coming out. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. So you gave it 5 out of 10?
Yeah.
Then we had Black Adam Year of the Villain 1. I really enjoyed this. Paul Jenkins on writing duties. I'm a bit of a Black Adam fan. I quite like Shazam and Black Adam in general in the comics.
Yeah.
I thought this was pretty damn good.
Yeah, I started off hating it, but then as it went on, it got better, and I really loved Black Adam's characterization.
Yeah. Well, Black Adam's a complex character, and he's often an anti-hero these days.
Yeah.
And I did, actually, for all the stuff we say about, like, the DC, the Shazam being evil was actually quite cool.
Yeah. I mean,
was that a Jokerized Shazam?
Did you read, have you been reading Batman Superman?
No, it was my first entry.
Yeah. So in issue 1 and 2, Shazam got Jokerized.
Okay, and Batman, I mean, I thought quite effective in this.
Yeah. He's gone off to Kandak, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I thought it was okay. I thought some of his dialogue was kind of funny, but Black Adam is what really made the kind of issue for me.
Yeah. It was good.
Yeah.
I gave this a 7.5 out of 10. Actually, to be honest, I really enjoyed it.
What did I give it? I have it in my notes. Oh, my foot! How? Sorry.
You're right.
Inexplicably hurt my foot. Where is it? I gave it 6.5 out of 10 with a note. 6. Black 5. Adam was awesome.
that's a fair. That's actually a very fair mark. I thought it was a good read. Then we had an interesting one, Amazing Mary Jane issue 1. This was basically telling the story of Mary Jane, obviously Spider-Man's girlfriend, and she's in Hollywood, and it's tying back into her actress past. Now I came in with reasonably low expectations, even though I love Mary Jane. I thought this was better than most modern Marvel comics. I found this was it's very meta, but I thought it was quite fun and funny and had a nice kind of slick art. I gave it a 7 out of 10. I enjoyed this more than I thought I would.
Yeah. This book, like one page I would hate it, then the next page I'd really like it. It was a mixed bag for me, but I do like how it was like back to, as you said, her actress stuff. Like what they fucking did to her in that Insomniac Spider-Man game, which has just turned into like a budget Lois Lane. I ended up really enjoying it. Overall, it's a strange experience for me. I'm giving it another 6.5 because
Well, that's fair enough. I mean, it's not a bad comic. I mean, you gave it 6.5, I gave it 7. Then we had Batman Superman 3. I found this was extremely engaging storytelling, and it might be enough for me to keep reading this title, even though I am personally tired of the insistence of everything revolving around the Batman Who Laughs. Yeah. I still really enjoyed this issue.
So, Batman Superman 3, was this your first issue of the...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I would recommend reading the previous two then as well.
Yeah.
Because they're good.
I read it back in the day. Back in the day when they had Batman Superman with Jeff Loeb.
Yeah, I
read it back then, and I've always enjoyed... I really like the way Batman and Superman play off each other.
Yeah.
I really, to be honest, I am going to dig out the first two, and then I'll keep reading. I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Obviously, Shazam doesn't turn up in this issue, which was weird, but then he turns up in Year of the Villain, Black Adam, so it makes sense. Also, I just want to say the Year of the Villains that I've read have been pretty strong.
Yeah, they're great. We've done a few of them on the signal, and I found they've been pretty damn good.
Yeah, the Lex Luthor one was really, really good that I read. And very different. It was a character study, but it was a very different character study to, like, Luthor, the trade we covered. You know, it wasn't the same thing. It was different, so... Actually, I was going to give this a higher score, but then I was talking to Ray from Last Sons of Krypton, and he changed my mind a bit, because he's reading this, and like in the previous two issues, the Batman and Superman's dynamic was really good, but in this issue, it felt like Superman was really second fiddle to the whole thing.
Right.
Sometimes.
Well, he was jokerized and fighting off the Joker.
You know, I think Ray was saying Batman kept dismissing his ideas, even though, you know, and I started thinking about it. I'm like, hey, Superman, you know, he thinks at super speed. He's an investigative journalist. Why does he always kind of get made, like, dumbed down when these two are paired together, you know? Like, Batman's still a good detective. You don't need to dumb him down. But that being said, Superman did make a really good showing in the past two issues, and I really liked the Jokerized Gordon in this issue as well. Yeah. But what killed it for me is... they go to the Fortress of Solitude, and ooh, what a twist. The Batman Who Laughs was 15 steps ahead, and he already has an agent there.
Oh, one of the robots, yeah?
Yeah, and Blue Beetle comes out, and I'm like, oh, wow, really? Like,
I've got a comment about this. I, to be honest, love Jamie Reyes as Blue Beetle.
Yeah.
I was trying to understand, was he killed or something and then brought back to life or something? Or I think what was going on?
I think he's just been jokerized.
Okay. Yeah. Because right. So, I read or watched the Batman and Bold TV show, and I just dug that character. You know what I mean? I thought it was a good interpretation, and the way he had the power of the Scarab, which the other Blue Beetle never worked out.
Yeah. Now, the whole thing is with this story is there's like six Joker Batarangs that will infect six heroes. So the whole pool is like, who were the infected heroes?
Uh-huh.
And so Blue Beetle being a reveal was one of them. But yeah, it's like they're talking about how it's at the Fortress of Solitude and like, oh, he'll never find us here. And I'm like, yes, he will, because he's a Batman Who Laughs.
Yeah, of course he will.
And predictably he finds it around because he's a goddamn, you know, mastermind genius, blah, blah, blah. It's like that a moment like that should be a twist, but it wasn't a twist. It was groan-worthy predictable. But
it was very predictable, basically.
That being said, I enjoyed the issue. It was just a step down from the previous two. So I gave it 6 out of 10, but I'll keep picking it up.
Okay, and I gave Batman Superman 7.5 out of 10, and the biggest thing for me was it just got me interested in the title. You know what I mean? It kickstarted my interest. So that in that way, it was a success. Then we had Contagion 4. Frankly, I thought this wasn't great, filled with wonky artwork. At its best, with the street-level interaction between the characters, I enjoyed that, but I thought the artwork looked rushed.
Yeah.
And I'm losing interest in the actual event and the antagonist as well.
So this is definitely the weakest issue of Contagion I read so far. I thought the previous couple of issues are much better.
Sure.
I'm still interested in the resolution for the Iron Fist side of things because I want to know, you know, what's going on there, because we never get new Iron Fist books, really. So,
like, and he was doing some stuff in this. I imagine you're in a tricky position as an Iron Fist fan. You've sort of got the exact opposite of a Batman fan who's so spoilt for choice. With Iron Fist, if you see him in these side issues, you're kind of gobbling up his appearance, you know?
Well, I mean, I never thought we'd have a Marvel event that actually revolved around Iron Fist lore. That's like a completely new thing. Like, one of the reasons I'm enjoying Contagion so much is it's a Marvel event where these characters, who are actually important to their universe,
yes,
actually get to shine when there's a world crisis. Like, they should shine when there's a world crisis, but they're not A-list characters, so they don't. And now we're finally kind of getting that, which is what I really love. And I loved, in the past couple of issues, there was some really gross artwork, which I loved as well, and I love horror and stuff. But this issue, it was just a lot of setup, and it was kind of weak, and I can't see how it's all going to be wrapped up in the next issue either without feeling rushed, because they spent kind of too much time pottering around, not really doing anything.
Yeah. No, I agree. Frankly.
Yeah. So I gave it... what did I give it? I gave it 6.5 out of 10, because I really enjoyed seeing, you know, Iron Fist and all these other characters that I like interact with each other.
Yeah, fair enough. What did I give it? I gave it a 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, but look, funnily enough, I thought when I do the weekly comics, and Connor is part of the weekly comics, you put your own comics in, it's always a gamble. Overall, I really enjoyed this week. You know, when all was said and done, I came out of it going, well, that was pretty damn enjoyable.
Hmm.
Like, I like with weekly comics when it's a mix of different stuff. I often try to get an image title in there as well because we get the free image, digital copies as well. So it's, you know, I try to keep it a bit interesting.
Yeah, I thought this week was like, I don't know, when I finished reading this week, I just thought it was really average.
Yeah, I would say it was slightly above average, but I like the variety. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it was definitely different.
Yeah. Now we're coming to Trade of the Week, which was Stumptown Volume 1 by Greg Rucker and Matthew Smallwood on art duties. I'll give the basic premise because, look, first off, I'm a card-carrying Greg Rucker fan. I really find his storytelling very interesting in general. He almost always gives me a really good product and sometimes it rises to great. I would say Stumptown is a really great series. Stumptown Volume 1 gives a slow intro, but by the end of the Stumptown Volume 1, which is I've got each of the volumes in beautiful hardcovers, so four beautiful hardcovers. You can also get them all digitally. They come out through Oni Press. It's basically female Rockford Files set now. She's a flawed but very likable character. She has a brother with Down syndrome, and she sort of cares for him. And, you know, she's an unlicensed private investigator who's getting a license, as they show on the show as well. And this storyline, by the way, Connor, is the first episode of the show. So this entire storyline, they adapt in one episode of the show.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the artwork needs to be said here. It's beautiful at points. Like, it's got a kind of, like, would you more say a sketch house feel to some of the stuff, Connor?
Yeah.
Like, it's not super tight, but every now and then he'll do, like, double panel, double page representations of Portland, where this is set. And
they were the
it's
best
just,
pages, the double page spread.
Yeah, staggeringly beautiful. Most of the comic relies heavily on Greg Rucker's writing to carry it over as a professional comic because I think the artwork probably isn't at a level that you would see at a lot of major comic book publishers. But the writing is sharp, and by the end of this storyline, I was so invested. And I remember reading this at first thinking, will I like this? It's kind of very outside my normal wheelhouse. I'm only reading because it's Greg Rucker. And then by the end of the volume, I was hooked, and I demolished volume 2, 3, and then later 4. They're very good comics, in my opinion. I'm giving it an 8.5 out of 10. Connor, I know you're coming in fresh.
Yeah.
Where were you?
Well, it's definitely better than Lois Lane. Like,
oh, yeah.
God, you know, this is like if that Lois Lane book was done well, you know.
Sure, yeah. Well, I said to you that Lois Lane was probably some of the weakest Greg Rucker I'd ever read.
Yeah, and the other thing with Lois Lane is, like, she's pretty flawless in that book as well.
Yeah,
like, this character makes mistakes and gets beaten up and stuff, you know, and, like, that endears her to me, Dex,
yes.
Whereas Lois is kind of so flawless that she annoys me, you know.
Oh, yeah. Dex is very flawed.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of her charm.
And I'm not talking about Lois in general. I'm just talking about in the Greg Rucker book right now.
Yes.
So
yes.
I noticed the colorist change from issue 2 to 3 was very noticeable. And I think I actually preferred the artwork in the last two issues because they're a lot less, like, detailed. Like, God, sometimes they felt like borderline stick figures with the lack of detail on their face in some of the issues. But, you know, as you said, like, the doubles... What really, like... Okay, so the mystery itself, I didn't think it was anything earth-shaking. It didn't really engage me that much.
No.
You know, it's like, it's no Chinatown. But what did engage me, I liked Dex, her brother. I liked, you know, the cop side character, and I really loved the setting. I loved Portland.
Yes.
You know, and I loved the way that was kind of drawn. So, like, that's the stuff that really grabs me and, like, why I'm kind of interested in reading future.
Yeah. It was for you, it was the characters that drew you in.
Yeah, the characters and I complain about the artwork, but, like, the art style of Portland and some of those double page spreads, like the atmosphere, I think is
a
good word.
Yes, it's very atmospheric. I agree with you. The artwork isn't my fucking favorite style. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's not really my stuff that I'd normally be seeking out, but it's very atmospheric. And I agree with you, Connor. The storyline with the mystery, it's okay. You know, it gets from A to B to C, but it's as much the character of Dex slash Denzadrine and that draws you in. And then by the end of the volume, I was reading it with a cup of tea on one of the nights when I was up in Port Macquarie when Michelle had gone to bed, and it got me all the way to the end, following that thread. And by the end, I was very invested in the world, whereas at the beginning, I wasn't really, you know?
Yeah.
I was kind of like, oh, this isn't great art. Oh, okay, so I'm going to read this for Gregor's writing. Okay, kind of a chore. But then by the end of it, I was like, well, they actually got me, you know? It was just kind of like a long sting to get me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a mixed review for me on the artwork, but I think Greg Rucka, who shines with flawed, relatable female characters, that's one of his strengths as a writer, I think he's on his game.
Mm. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. The first issue was a bit slow, but like I did pick up. I mean, I think I gave it a 7 out of 10, which is like
good score.
7 out of 10 is like it's a good book.
Yes,
you know, like it's a good rating for me because I rate pretty harshly. So
sure.
What really let it down for me was some of the artwork, especially in the earlier issues, like just not being able to. Like, people didn't look like people and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, the daughter,
yeah.
Isabel, like, I don't know what was going on with her sometimes. But, and the mystery itself, I thought was just, like, very eh. But, like, everything else I really liked, and I want to check out the other volumes now, which is always,
yeah.
Obviously a good sign. So.
And they only get better, to be honest. Like, I read this, I don't know if you listened to Word Balloon. Word Balloon, if you have never listened to it, is John Suntress doing long-form interviews with people.
Okay.
And, yeah, he's really good. He has a lot of the big names. Like, he's got a relationship with Bendis, and so Bendis has a thing called Bendis Tapes. Rucka comes on, you know, reasonably regularly, and he does Rucka Debrief. And I, as a Greg Rucka fan, get so much out of those conversations because he gives a lot of insight into what he's working on. He'll talk quite openly about a lot of stuff. Behind the making of it all. And just him talking with John Suntress about Stumptown is what made me go out and search out Stumptown. I've never heard of it. Yeah, I'd recommend Word Balloon if you're a big comics fan. It's a very, very good podcast. I've actually got a bit of a relationship with him. Chat to him a bit on Facebook. Very nice guy. He's good value.
Reading... I don't know if this is in whatever you read, but there was, like, long interviews with the artist at the end of each issue.
Oh, really?
And I found those interesting because it just showed me how much work was put into this book and how much effort was put into the detail of the city. So that made the book more enjoyable for me as well, like getting into the artist's headspace.
Yeah, and I believe this artist did volumes 1 and 2, but I don't think he did volume 3, but he may have come back for 4.
Yeah.
They certainly switched art, which was quite jarring, I think, on volume 3. And then I think they might have gone back to the original artist for the next volume. Okay. But he takes his time as an artist.
Yeah.
I think he's quite slow.
It took very long from what I was reading.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, I wouldn't say easier for the writer, but it can be a lot faster for the writer.
Yeah.
You know? Look, man, to be honest, this is something where I would say to basically the people who are interested in Greg Rucka's writing that I think Stumptown... As a whole, is very essential to getting to sort of the heart of some of his best writing. Another book that I'm going to recommend we do on The Signal shortly is Queen and Country, a black and white spy series that Rucka does. He has a lot of good creator-owned work, like Lazarus. I think it's a lot better than some of the more modern DC stuff he's done. Like, I think Lois Lane, I'd put it as lower. You know how we're talking about lower-tier Tarantino?
Yeah.
I'd put Lois Lane as lower tier Rucka, and I'd probably put his second Wonder Woman run as lower tier as well. But stuff that he's doing like right now with Lazarus and with Stumptown, I think it's some of the best stuff of his career. So I think as he's getting older, he's more and more focusing on these projects outside the big two, which I think is a good thing, really. Mm.
Totally.
I guess maybe it's just me growing a bit older, but I'm less and less invested in the sort of standard superhero and capes kind of comics.
I can't blame you. Look at what we've been talking about this podcast.
Sure.
Like,
yeah. Yeah, and partly it's what they're pumping out. But I also think a lot of people are bringing their own original concepts to Image and to Oni Press and to Dark Horse and et cetera. And I think it's upon us as reviewers and as consumers to probably explore it a bit more. So I'm reaching out to places like Aftershock Comics for them to maybe send us some, you know, digital copies and stuff like that, same as Image does already, so that we can broaden our own palette as well.
Yeah.
And after that, I'm going to run for president.
After that
stump speech. Get in line. Hey, look, if Trump can do it, anyone can.
Yeah, that's true. I might already be president. I'm just very secretive about it. So.
Oh, wowee.
What if you had the president on the signal, Dave?
REM, World Leader Pretend. Do you remember that song? That was a song I used to love that song. I used to get very stoned in the mid-90s and listen to that song. it seemed to make a lot of sense at the time. Now, look, thank you very much, Connor. This has been a highly enjoyable show, and we're really looking forward to having you on a regular basis. Now, one thing we do on The Signal, which Stu and I always have done, we kind of trade off week after week with the trade. So this week was my selection of Stumptown. Do you have a book, Connor, that you're thinking of for next week?
I have like 2 to 3. Sure. But I can't really choose between them, but do you want me to say them anyway?
Yeah, you can say them, and then I'll confirm it when we decide which one you want to do. I'll confirm it on Facebook. So what are you thinking of?
Well, I've read a lot of Wolverine, but I have Claremont and Miller's Wolverine on my shelf, which I haven't read.
Oh, the original yeah. Limited series. Yep, okay.
I'm not sure if you guys might have done that already.
No, we haven't done it. I can confirm that.
And then I have Black Hole by Charles Burns.
I know what that is. That's a pretty full-on indie comic from the 80s, isn't it?
Yeah, but that is...
About a sexually transmitted disease. Yeah,
it seems really weird and stuff, but it's on my shelf and I should read it. That's like 12 issues, though, so I'm not sure if that's too long. And then...
I wouldn't mind reading that. I've got the week off. I could do that. I actually think I own that as well.
Okay, cool. And the other one was Stumptown Volume 2. So, those are my
any
three.
Of the above. Okay. Well, what we'll do is Connor and I will decide over the next couple of days which one of those we'll do. Cool. And I'll put it on the Facebook page, which I always do, so people are aware of what we can do so they can read along if they want to. All of them are good options, man, to be honest.
Yeah, that's why I can't choose.
so. Oh, well, the good thing is you've got a trade. You've got week-by-week trade, so you'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So on that note, I would like to remind everyone that we're a member of The Collective, shows like Inner Demons, Last Sons of Krypton, Into the Night. I'm going to try again. Sons of the Dragon, the Immortal Iron Fist podcast.
Yep, you did it.
There you go. You're a member of The Collective with that one as well, aren't you?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I knew that, yeah. And many others, like I am not your target, or I am your target demographic. I always get that wrong. I always think that he should say, I am not your target demographic, because I think it's more edgy.
Yeah.
So I always get it wrong, but I love the title.
Yeah,
at the same
I do
time.
Too, actually.
Venomaniacs. There's a lot of good podcasts in The Collective. Obviously, Signal Doom, which you're listening to. But we have alliances all over the place. And the Jesters at Inner Demons, we can't wait to have a show with those guys, because they bring a lot to the table with their love of the Rider, Ghost Rider. Where are you with the Rider? Are you a big fan like me?
I'm a big Johnny Blaze fan. I read his whole 70s and 80s run, and it's like I think it's fantastic. But
there you go, cool.
Yeah.
So would you just ride if you could, like with the Rider just constantly out there on the streets? Because I would, seriously.
Well, for me, I like the stories where he's out on like you know the desert and the flats, encountering weird stuff. You know, if I'm going to be a rider, I'm going to be out on the open road, not urban.
Not cruising the urban jungle, which is where I'd be with my fucking chains.
Yeah, it's too cramped for me, man.
You like to be out on the open road.
Yeah.
Born to be wild, easy rider.
Yep, race death now and then.
I love it, man. Well, Connor, thank you so much for coming on The Signal. And kids, we will catch you next time. Good night.
Wanted man in California, wanted man in Buffalo, wanted man in Kansas City, wanted man in Ohio, wanted man in Mississippi, wanted man in old Cheyenne. Wherever you might look tonight, you might see this wanted man. I might be in Colorado or Georgia by the sea, working for some man who may not know who I might be. And if you ever see me coming, and if you know who I am, don't you breathe it to nobody, cause you know I'm on the lam. Wanted man by Lucy Watson, wanted man by Jeannie Brown, wanted man by Nellie Johnson, wanted man in this next town. But I've had all that I wanted of a lot of things I've had, and a lot more than I needed of some things that turned out bad. Da, 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 da. got sidetracked in El Paso. Stopped to get myself a map. Went the wrong way into Juarez with Juanita on my lap. Then I went to sleep in Shreveport. Woke up in Abilene, wondering why the hell I'm wanted at some town halfway between. Wanted man in California, wanted man in Buffalo, wanted man in Kansas City, wanted man in Ohio. There's somebody set to grab me anywhere that I might be. So wherever you might look tonight, you might get a glimpse of me.